The opinions expressed in this program are those of the guests and host and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Topeka Capital Journal, CJ Online, or Morris Communications.
Good morning, Topeka. This hour is brought to you in part by the Golden Corral, 16th and Wanamaker, with the best buffet you're going to find in Northeast Kansas. Believe you me, this month and next month's special. You know, last month, for the last 3 months, we've had rib specials at the Golden Corral. Well, for the next two and a half months, it's going to be shrimp specials. All you can eat, and shrimp prepared 10 different ways. Folks, you've got to check it out. The Golden Corral, 16th and Wanamaker, just right east of the beautiful West Ridge Mall. They're open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. Check them out. Councilman Bob Archer's on his way in this morning. He's going to be my 8 o'clock guest. Coming in at 9, of course, John Arnold and Earl Glenn. At 10 o'clock, Dave Jackson, he'll be in, and we'll be talking about lawn and garden tips. I'm sure we're going to get into crabgrass again. I'll tell you, we've got a yard full of it. Before Councilman Archer gets here, let's take a look at the headlines in today's paper. Top of the fold, front page news. What were our county commissioners thinking? Or two of our county commissioners? Well, we'll boil it down to one. Hecht County settle pay suit. Now, folks, for those of you that might be new to Topeka, new to this show, you don't have a historical perspective on what's happened in this community in the past. Well, Bob Hecht was our district attorney for 8 long years in this community and was defeated a couple of years ago. Eric Rucker defeated Bob Hecht in the primary, and then Chad Taylor was eventually elected as our new incoming district attorney. A story that really didn't surface during the campaign should have. Eric Rucker knocked Bob Hecht out of office before this story surfaced, and this is the biggie. Bob Hecht, for 8 years, was charging the county overtime pay. Overtime pay. Now, Bob Hecht was knocking down around a little over $100,000 a year for the 8 years that he served as county district attorney. But along with his $100,000 salary, in fact, his last year of service, in 2008, he actually earned $117,000. So, over the 8 years that Bob Hecht was paid in excess of $800,000 of your taxpayer money, folks, he was also charging you, the taxpayers, overtime pay, the days that he had to work overtime. Now, Bob Hecht, the first year in office, and this is going to be the last time I'm going to have an opportunity to read these figures, folks, so if you're longtime listeners of the show, bear with me, you won't have to listen to this again. But I just want to run through these figures one more time on how Bob Hecht took advantage of you and me, the taxpayers of Shawnee County, and take advantage of us he did. This is absolutely incredible. The first year that Bob Hecht served as our district attorney in 2001, Bob Hecht charged you and I $14,000 in overtime pay. In 2002, Bob Hecht was working a little harder, a little longer hours, I guess. Because in 2002, Bob Hecht charged you and I $19,800 in overtime pay. In 2003, $27,834 was paid to Mr. Hecht in overtime pay. Now, keep in mind, folks, as far as being reimbursed for overtime pay, these bills had to be submitted to our county commissioners to approve. So, these absolutely outrageous figures I'm going to be reading off here, the county commission either ignored them or didn't know where to look, but all of these figures were out there for the county commission to review. Somehow, some way, we ended up $481,000 poorer as taxpayers of Shawnee County. But let me continue. In 2004, Bob Hecht's overtime pay jumped from $27,834 to $49,933. It gets worse. 2005, that was the year that Bob Hecht put in $53,330 worth of overtime pay. Well, not to be outdone, in 2006, $69,935 was charged to you and I, the county taxpayers, for Bob Hecht overtime. Well, in 2007, this is really when Bob had the old nose to the grindstone, because in 2007, Bob Hecht's salary was $114,000. And Bob Hecht charged you, the taxpayers, $119,000 in overtime pay. His last year of office, thank God, or this county would be broke, $127,000 in overtime pay. Now, that totals over the eight-year period, Bob Hecht, over 8 years, his salary, his basic salary, was $839,000. Overtime pay, $481,000. Okay, well, this issue came to light in late 2008, early 2009, that Bob Hecht was charging some outrageous sums for overtime pay. In fact, our incoming district attorney stumbled on it. I believe that Chad Taylor made an inquiry with the county commission that how much can we draw in overtime pay as the district attorney? And it then the county commission took a look at what they had been approving over the past 8 years, and the total came to $481,000. So needless to say, the county commission, now that they were awakened from their deep sleep, then brought this issue where it saw the light of day and changes were made. But at any rate, $500,000 were $500,000 poor. So our county commissioners then went to the attorney general to see whether Mr. Hecht could be prosecuted, whether there were any criminal statutes out there to where we could prosecute Bob Hecht. It turned out there wasn't. So then the county decided they were going to sue Mr. Hecht in hopes of getting their $481,000 back. Well, to make a long story short, Bob Hecht agreed to settle with the county. Now, listen to this settlement. This is unbelievable. Bob Hecht agreed to settle with the county for $100,000. Now, Bob Hecht walked off with $481,000. Bob Hecht agreed to settle for $100,000. And the settlement was going to be paid in part by an insurance company. Basically, it was the bonding agency, as I understand it. They were going to kick in, Old Republic Surety was going to kick in $50,000 of the $100,000 settlement. And good old Bob agreed that he would kick in additional $50,000 after his death. Yep. You heard that correctly. And if you read Mike Hull's column in this morning's paper, the remaining $50,000 will be paid back to the county upon Bob Hecht's death. So, the $481,000 that Bob Hecht made, folks, we're going to get back $100,000, which means Bob Hecht walks with, well, he walks with it all, really. Because the insurance company, Old Republican Surety, they're going to pay $50,000. Bob Hecht isn't going to kick in one thin dime until he's dead and gone. And then he's agreed that he'll write a check from the grave, I guess, for the remaining $50,000. Now, unbelievably, you know, we know Ted Hensley is going to vote with Miller. Well, Vic Miller votes to approve the settlement, which means Ted Hensley obviously is going to follow suit. Shelley Buehler had sense enough to say no to this. So the vote was 2-1 to basically just kiss off in excess of $400,000 of your taxpayer money. Absolutely incredible. This has got to be the incredible story of the year. You know, we have disagreements with our elected officials. Oftentimes we disagree with the decisions we make. And a lot of times that's based on money, it's based on basic political philosophy, and it's what I like to refer to as agreeing to disagree. Because again, you know, I'm of the conservative right persuasion, no doubt about that, and a lot of times I'm going to agree to disagree with the left of center crowd. That doesn't mean I think the left of center crowd is bad, doesn't mean I think they're dishonest. It just means we have a disagreement on how to solve a problem. And I respect the left of center liberals. I just don't philosophically agree with him. I think they love this community and love this state, love this country as much as I do, but I disagree with their solutions. But I respectfully disagree. I don't respectfully disagree with this decision, folks. This is absolute irresponsibility at its worst. We have just thrown away $400,000 of your tax money and my tax money. There's no excuse for this. No excuse whatsoever for this type of settlement. A $50,000 check is going to be written from the grave, and that's all Bob Hecht has to come up with. Wow. You know, and we roundly criticized, I've heard the criticism of former Mayor Butch Felker, who basically Bob Hecht had tossed out of office because of a $1,000 campaign contribution irregularity. Rita Klein, he tossed Rita Klein out of office. And by the way, up until the issue of Rita Klein overpaying an employee $20,000, Rita Klein had a reputation of doing a great job in this county as our county treasurer. Tossed her out of office. So he was responsible basically for getting rid of two elected officials, and we are $400,000 poor as a result of Mr. Hecht's 8 years. Okay. The peanuts that he came up with in terms of the Felker situation and the Klein situation, they pale in comparison to the money that Bob Hecht walked away with. Okay, let's take a quick break, and hopefully Bob Archer is going to be joining us in a few minutes. He's our scheduled guest. Stay tuned. I'm Jim Cates.
DJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Savings for everybody. We're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka. 272-6100.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back. Rick House Van Geese, 37th and Burlingame, right off of I-470. Folks, it's a fun store to go to. If there's anything you're looking for, maybe you're not looking for anything specifically, you just want to spend a day out shopping. Some time shopping with the little woman or the little guy, whatever. Folks, check out Brick House Antiques. It's just a fun place to go. And you just might find something you want in there, but you also might find that you've got some antiques at home that you're saying, hey, why do we have these antiques? We don't really appreciate them. We need the money. So why don't we call Brick House Antiques and have them come out to our house and take a look at what we've got. Because this is how Brick House Antiques reloads and restocks their store. They buy antiques as well. So, folks, if you're looking for a fun experience tomorrow, Sunday, they're open 7 days a week. Run out to Brick House Antiques, 37th and Burlingame, and just kind of sniff around. I think you'll enjoy the experience. Or if you're looking to pick up a little cash, if you've got some antiques on hand, give the owners, Coralie Evans, Lisa Cusick, a call at 267-3400, and they'd be more than happy to come out and take a look at what you've got. Okay, Brick House Antiques. Bob Archer just visited with Councilman Archer. He is on his way in, was unavoidably delayed, so he's going to be joining us in about 10 minutes. And over the next 10 minutes, we'll be reading your emails. If there's something that's on your mind, you can email me, jim.cates@cjonline.com. An email from Terrence, and if you missed the first 15 minutes of the show, we were reviewing the Bob Heck settlement, and this is outrageous, folks. Everybody in this county should be outraged at what our county commission has done this time. Bob Heck, again, charged $481,000 to you and I, the taxpayers of Shawnee County, for overtime pay. But Bob Heck didn't hide this. I mean, it was out there in the light of day. Our county commission just wasn't smart enough to pick it up over an eight-year period. None of this came to light. None of this surfaced until Bob Heck had left office. 8 years running, we were paying Bob Heck overtime pay. And the first year, Bob Heck got away with a $14,000 charge to the county. By the end of the eighth year, it was up to $127,000 a year that he was billing the county. But again, the county commissioners didn't pick it up. So Bob Heck, $500,000 richer, just by virtue of charging the county overtime pay while he was serving as district attorney. Now, once the county commissioners woke up to the fact that they had really dropped the ball on this one, as far as checks and balances being built into the system, because the county commissioner's job is to look for things like this, to make sure nobody is abusing the system. Nobody's walking off with your tax dollars. Well, the county woke up to the fact, in fact, it was our incoming district attorney that basically was waving the red flag that something just doesn't look quite right here. So then our county commission did go to our attorney general to ask if criminal charges could be filed, and nope, no criminal charges, because Bob Heck really wasn't hiding anything. It was there if the county commissioners would have picked it up. So the county commissioners did, rightfully so, as alternative B, was to have filed a civil suit in hopes of recouping $481,000 that they never should have paid out in the first place. Well, to make a long story short, if you missed the first 15 minutes, Bob Heck agreed to settle with the county for $100,000 of the $481,000 he walked away with. But listen to the settlement if you missed it during the first 15 minutes. $50,000 of this $100,000 is going to be paid by an insurance company. The remaining $50,000 is going to be paid by Bob Heck after his death. You heard me right. You can read all about it at the front page, top of the full story of today's Capital Journal. Of course, it's on CJ Online, and it's just absolutely an amazing story. Now, the vote to settle the settlement was a 2-to-1 vote. We have three commissioners in Shawnee County. one of which used good sense and said no to the settlement. That was Shelley Beeler. And then, of course, we have Miller slash Inslee that voted for the settlement. Okay, to the emails we go. One from Terrence. Good morning, Terrence. It says, Jim, how do we collect $50,000 after someone is dead? Did not the county have the same problem with the cemetery failure? They never collected any money from those dead owners. It looks like all the county may get is $50,000 from the insurance company. That is just stupid. Terrence, so well said. It's an incredible story. Hopefully things are going better in Raleigh County than they're going in Shawnee County with our current commission. Although, again, I want to give an attagirl to Shelley Beeler. She absolutely was right in saying this is absolutely ridiculous. This makes no sense. And had the wisdom to vote no on this $100,000 settlement. I mean, Bob Hecht, once again, just walks. Unbelievable. And again, just to make sure that everybody remembers what happened back when Bob Hecht ran for re-election. He was defeated in the primary by Eric Rucker, and this was not an issue in the primary. Bob Hecht was defeated for a lot of other reasons. This story surfaced after the election. So, incredible. Speaking of county commissioners, Commissioner Miller is being called on the carpet by the city of Topeka. And no, this doesn't have anything to do with computers. It doesn't have anything to do with helicopters. It has to do with a home that Mr. Miller apparently has owned kind of over the past 15 years. And this home is now way out of compliance with our code compliance department. A lot of things wrong with this house. And Commissioner Miller has simply said that he's not sure that he owns the house because this deed, it's been a clouded title for 15 years. Now, Commissioner Miller is a lawyer. And as I understand it, I'm certainly no expert in this field. I can't think of any field I really am an expert, certainly not this one. But as I understand it, a clouded title is not that difficult to handle. And this has been ongoing for 15 years because Mr. Miller, along with apparently one other couple, purchased this home, I guess as an investment, 15 years ago. And soon after they purchased it, they found that the title was clouded. Now, I was under the impression when you bought any piece of property, the first thing you did was to get title insurance. Title insurance, basically, as I understand it, would have taken care of this from the get-go. In other words, they couldn't have purchased the property if the title was clouded 15 years ago when apparently they made this purchase. It's an amazing story in its own right. There's got to be more to this story than I understand because I can't imagine a lawyer purchasing a piece of property without running a title search to making ensuring the fact that they are going to have a title to a piece of property that's free and clear. So, quite a story indeed, and I'm sure there's going to be more said about this one because there's going to be some, hopefully, some heavy fines levied against the owners of this property because it's now an eyesore and in the neighborhood that it's in. It's the address of the property is 1133 Western, folks, and not a bad neighborhood. Not a real good one on that block now because this has not only become an eyesore, it's also become a health hazard. And it's now attracting rodents and rats and what have you, I guess. So really a health hazard to the other neighbors. And again, hopefully our elected official, Commissioner Miller, will be taking care of this in short order. But folks, if you're in the real estate business, if you understand any of this, I guess I was somewhat confused after reading the article. Isn't the first thing you do when you're buying property is to get a title insurance policy, making sure that that title is not going to have any encumbrances on it? I thought that was 101. And are there any lenders out there that are lending money on the purchase of real estate without title insurance? how did this happen? How did they get into this mess in the first place? I guess it's question number one, and why has it taken 15 years to deal with, basically, a clouded title issue? I just don't get it. There was a period in my life, folks, to where I had the answers to everything. Anymore, I wake up every day knowing that I know a little bit less today than I knew yesterday. So, again, jim.cates at cgonline.com. If you can help me with this story, I would appreciate it, because, once again, I am confused by a lot of the facts as I understand them. And I would appreciate your help on that. City Councilman Bob Archer is going to be joining us in a few moments. He is on his way and should be here around 8:30 or so. And Bob is not going to be driving in rainy conditions today. We could get some rain, though, later this evening. Scattered thunderstorms in Topeka later this evening, which is not really going to cool anything off, because we're looking at high in the low 90s today, and tomorrow it's going to be sunny as well, sunny skies, and temperatures still in the low 90s, but at least there is a possibility some moisture might be falling from the skies this evening, and we'll be talking about that at 10 o'clock this morning when we've got Dave Jackson coming on, and we're going to be talking about lawn and garden issues. So if you have a lawn and garden question, you can email me now. We'll make sure that Dave answers it between the hours of 10 and 11. Well, since I've got a couple of minutes to kill, let's talk about our president. He has stepped in it again, it appears, on this mosque situation at Ground Zero in New York City. What a mess, huh? What a mess. How do you feel about it? That Obama, there was a cartoon in yesterday's Capital Journal, for those of you that missed it, great cartoon, with our president straddling the fence on this issue, just depending on what audience he was appearing before, what time of the day it was. That's where Bob Hecht stood on this whole mosque issue at Ground Zero. And it is a tough one, but I would think, you know, out of respect, if the Muslims had any respect whatsoever for this country, in view of the fact that 60% plus of Americans think this is in extremely bad taste, to build a Muslim mosque where the World Trade Center's towers once stood. At the very least, this is tasteless behavior. And again, if our Muslim community had any love, any respect for this country whatsoever, they would respect the rights of so many in New York City, so many citizens of this country that just thinks it's in horrible, horrible taste to build this mosque. But there are those, apparently, that are militant Muslims, that basically this is just the needle in the eye to America, saying, up yours. You know, we took down two of your towers, more to come, and here's going to be a constant reminder of the havoc we're going to wreak on your country by building this mosque within a block of Ground Zero. So again, Obama has stepped in it. The latest polling shows now that 25% of Americans view Obama as being in the hip pockets of the Muslim religion, if not a Muslim himself. His polling numbers continue to shrink. His favorable rating with the American public has gone down dramatically over the past year, and this issue is certainly not going to do anything to enhance his reputation. Where he's really losing support is in the Hispanic community. His numbers with the Hispanic community are really, really, really nosediving. The black community, amazingly so, it's amazing to me that 88% of blacks still view President Obama is doing a good job. You know, we talk about racial tolerance and what have you, and race not being an issue. Well, it is, folks. 88% of our Afro-Americans or blacks view Obama as doing a good job as president of this country. Now, folks, when you've got every other ethnic group saying, no, Obama isn't doing quite that good of a job, it gives pause. Well, good morning, Councilman Archer. Get a good night's sleep.
Good morning, Jim.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Let me first apologize to you and your listeners. I had 9 o'clock on my calendar to be here, and I screwed up, and I apologize. I am so sorry.
Well, glad to have you with us. It's always good to have you with us. Now, at 9 o'clock, we always have our top stories of the week segment. And today we've got John Arnold coming in. He's here, of course, every Friday.
Okay.
And Earl Glenn is going to be joining us today, folks. He's with us every other week. Next week will be TV 49, and the week after, TV 13. And that's every Friday at 9, folks. That's when we talk about the top stories of the week. So we might be talking about Bob Hecht again at 9 o'clock. God almighty. What a story. You've had quite a week.
I have. I've been very busy, got a lot going on, and speaking of Bob Hecht, I went to the Shawnee County Commission meeting yesterday morning and listened to it. That's a sad situation, that the way.
Well, thankfully, we've got one clear-thinking County Commissioner, Shelley Beeler, that voted no on this nonsense. But Bob Hecht, you know, has walked away with $481,000 of overtime pay because our county commissioners, frankly, were asleep at the switch. You know, these vouchers were all turned in. And Bob Hecht, obviously, this was legalized thievery. But our county commissioners over an 8-year period at some point in time should have caught this. They didn't. But Shelley Beeler voted no on what to me is an outrageous settlement. $50,000 from the insurance company. And Bob is going to write us a check after he dies for $50,000. A check from the grave. And, of course, Ted Inslee, and I've known Ted forever. I like Ted Inslee. But whatever Vic Miller does, Ted Inslee is going to follow lockstep with Miller. And so you had the Miller-Inslee two votes saying yes to this outrageous, outrageous stupidity. I can't believe it happened.
I have a plate full with the city council. I don't think I want to comment on.
I don't blame you. I
go to all the county commission meetings that I can just to listen and learn and try to help us partner better. City and county work together. I voted for parks and rec consolidation, some IT consolidation that we could have done and saved money that we didn't do, but I try to go to county commission meetings when I can just to listen, learn, and see what's going on on their governing body.
You got an earful this week with this Hecht settlement. My Lord.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I think you're doing a great job. You know, you and I have talked off the air. I've said it on the air on many, many occasions, Bob. I think you're a breath of fresh air on our city council. I think you're a reasonable fiscal conservative. I think you're really watching out after the taxpayers' interest. You and I agree on most issues. One that I'm not sure we would totally agree on, and I want to get back to this whole pothole versus overlay controversy. Bob, with the exception, this happens to be in your district, because I garage sale every Thursday and every Saturday. I'm a record collector, and I'm always looking for the old 45 RPMs and the LPs, so I'm all over town.
Well, you've probably seen my wife out there doing the same thing. She participates in that activity a lot.
Well, I have that. But, so I'm on all the side streets of Topeka.
Right.
I don't see potholes in Topeka now, with the exception, in your district, 37th Street eastbound from Wanamaker to Farallon.
Right.
It's close to being gravel, and there's some bad potholes on that stretch. That's it. I can't think of another street to where we've got pothole challenges. Now, as far as overlay challenges, or streets looking like hell and being rougher than rough as rough can be, lots of those.
Yeah.
So this whole pothole versus overlay controversy, where are you on this issue? Are you on the pothole side, or do you think our money should be used basically for major overlay projects?
Well, I believe
there's about four questions there, I think.
Well, I agree 100% on 37th Street, and one of the things that disappoints me in the way we approach things is if you look at 37th Street, like, for example, 37th and Bell, city crews have been around, and they patched a few potholes that were right on 37th. Well, 10 feet away, south on Bell, 10 feet away, 15 feet away, there's more, you know, good-sized potholes. And I think in many cases we respond just to what's reported and perhaps could be a little bit more efficient in addressing potholes. I think that there's been a lot of noise about potholes versus overlay. But I think when we advertised for the half-cent sales tax last year, you know, I've personally suffered from pothole syndrome. And so I think, you know, a part of that money has to go to fix potholes.
Aren't we pretty much on top of that now?
I think we've made a lot of progress. I really do.
Yeah.
And it's not perfect. But, yeah, and the other side of the argument is for – a permanent fix, which is, you know, the mill and the overlay, and a lot of streets need to be mill and overlaid to be fixed and to hold up that we don't have potholes. But I think it was the intention of the voters that we spend some money on potholes and do the best we could. And, you know, the winter we had was horrendous. And that made the situation a little bit worse. But, I'm on the side of the voters expect us to spend some money on potholes, but the vast majority of it should be spent on mill and
overlay.
Permanent.
By the way, I just got an email from Terrence, and we were talking about the weather forecast, and it currently apparently is raining, or a lot of thunder and lightning, and the north end of Tuttle Creek right now as we speak. So apparently they're getting a little weather.
Oh, I hope we get some
weather. Oh, boy. Well, we've got a 50% shot at rain tonight. Well, we've got the mayor coming in Monday, and I'm going to call Bill later this morning and have Bill, if you would, bring us basically a timeline on some of these major overlay projects. I haven't seen a recent list. And this concerns me because, again, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm still thinking Google might come to Topeka.
Right.
And I hope that if we're really going to get serious about these major mill overlays, I'm not concerned about some side street in Oakland or some side street in North Topeka or some side street in Southwest Topeka. Let's dress up our major thoroughfares that really need some work, like 6th Street, 10th Street, Huntoon, Fairlawn, you know, those are four that I'm on, all of which, you know, need a major mill overlay.
Yeah.
And these are the streets that visitors to this community are going to be traveling, and I would think we would take care of those first.
Yeah, I agree.
That favorable impression of this community.
I agree. One of the problems I think we've got right now is that the sales tax money is not coming in the way we anticipated. I talked to the city finance director in our policy and finance meetings, and we got a bump in May and June, but I think July is down, and that makes sense because the state increased sales tax by 1% in July. So I would imagine that anybody that was going to buy a car or any significant purchase did it in May or June, anticipating the increase, and we may be blunted as far as our sales tax receipts the rest of the year, and it may impact 2011 also. So that's the concern I have is we're going to be down in sales tax, and how are we going to continue our commitment to fix streets to the
Then
the
doesn't it become even more important to take care of our major thoroughfares, though?
Well,
I'm looking at the visitors coming to this community.
Yeah.
You know, we can suffer through
right.
You know, some overlay work that needs to be done on our side streets. But let's take care of the streets that visitors are going to see in this community first.
Well, the good news is next Tuesday on August 24th, we're going to have a special work session to discuss fixing potholes, overlay, to make sure we've got our priorities lined up, and to also get an update on how sales tax receipts are actually coming in. So I think that's going to be a good opportunity.
Good.
That'll be at 5:15. And I encourage citizens, anytime I send an email, I always encourage citizens to attend work sessions, city council meetings, because I think when people are there and express their views, the city council works a lot better than when they don't.
And so, city Councilman Bob Archer, by the way, is my guest. District number 7, which is Southwest Topeka, and on this mill and overlay versus potholes, This is an issue, folks, and we've got Bill Bunton's going to be with us Monday morning. But Bill Bunton, that'll be 9 o'clock Monday morning. Tim Richards is going to be with us at 8. That Bill Bunton and Jeff Prysner agree. Yes, they do. Yes, they do on the same side of this one. Yes, they are the little rascals.
I know there's been a lot of background noise, particularly with the county commission and the motor fuels tax.
That's still unresolved.
My point is our streets are a mess, and we need every penny we can get to get our streets taken care of. And I would hope that the county commission will not take the $2 million motor fuels tax away from the city so that we can dedicate that money to fixing our streets.
Well, after letting Bob Hecht get away with writing a $50,000 check from the grave, anything's possible out of our county commission. Thankfully, we've got at least Cheller Buehler's there. Bob, let's talk about Tuesday night.
Okay.
Not a bad job. You know, and again, I want to compliment our city council. I watched quite a bit of the meeting Tuesday night, again, for the whole decorum. And I say this every time I say this virtually every time any council members on this show. Market improvement. In terms of fiscal responsibility, again, not a bad job Tuesday night. There's not going to be a mill levy increase for the citizens of Topeka. Not bad. My question is, I want to discuss TMTA, our bus service.
Okay, sure.
Because, Bob, for 15 years, we had a 3-mill levy to fund bus service in Topeka.
Right.
Now, we had that one god-awful year under Bush. We had $4 a gallon gas, and there were some horrible management decisions made by TMTA that year that cost a lot of money.
That's true.
So our city council came in last year and said, okay, we're going to grant you 1 year of a mill increase. We're going to take it up 1.5 mills, or 1.4 tenths, I think, of a mill.
1.4.
Yeah, 1.4, basically to clean everything up. This is going to be temporary. What's happened? Because wasn't that 1.4 mill increase to take care of some bad management decisions that had been made the year before? And this was supposed to clean all of that up. Now, we're still looking. Now we're looking at a permanent 1.2 mill levy increase. What's going wrong? What's happened? Are we still getting bad management decisions? And if so, why? If that's the case, what can we do to turn this around?
Okay. TMTA.
And again, about 18 questions there.
Right. TMTA is kind of a complicated situation. But the bottom line in many respects is there's no such thing as a temporary tax increase. It never seems to happen. But to some degree, TMTA lost ridership. For example, the ridership peaked in March of 2008 at about 150,000 passenger trips. And in March of 2010, it had gone down to about 80,000. So it had dropped dramatically. That's fuel price driven to a large extent. Ridership is very fuel tax driven.
Wow.
So that's been a problem. They had lost some federal funding that for whatever reason, I don't know if it was part of budget cuts back or whatever. So the city council last year said, we want to have an analysis done of the operation of TMTA. And we had a local firm that agreed to do it.
Montgomery Anderson. For free.
Agreed to do it pro bono. They said we can't do a lot of depth, but we can go in for a week. We'll give our services and try to give you some opportunities to save money. Mm-hmm. So the city council, again, on a temporary one-year basis, increased the mill levy by 47%. It went from 3 to 4.4. In the meantime, a group of consultants went in, analyzed TMTA operations. They didn't report to the city council. They reported to TMTA. The study cost $197,000.
When we could have had this done for free.
We could have had something done to get us started.
Yeah.
The consultants went in, did a study, and they came back and said that TMTA, in comparison to some peer transit operations, was pretty efficient. and those peer transit companies were Des Moines, Iowa, Springfield, Illinois, a bunch of Midwest.
Well, for $197,000, they better come back with a report that says I'm doing a good job.
So they did, and they looked.
I'm going to be writing them a check from the grave.
So they looked at some peer companies, yeah, said you're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
And when I went through the study, I noticed that the peer companies, 6 out of 8, had 60-minute peak headways. In other words, during peak times, they would go every 60 minutes. Topeka has 30-minute headways. In other words, we pick up people every 30 minutes during peak times. And so I had a simple question. How much money would we save if we emulated 6 out of 8 and went to 60-minute headways during peak times? The consultant came back and said, I wouldn't recommend it. We would be cutting service, blah, blah, blah. But in the bottom line was we would save $1.2 to $1.3 million. And so I had made a proposal that we do that in one of the budget sessions, and unfortunately, there's just not a consensus to do that. So we wound up cutting them $200,000 or, about 0.2 mils on Tuesday night. But that's sort of the history of TMTA. It's very, like I say, it's complicated, complex. I'm not an expert in transit operations. Nobody on the city council is an operational expert. But the fact is that we could have saved, $1.2 to $1.3 million. And actually, we could have gone back to the 3 mil level that we had been at for years and years. Yeah. One other thing, let me mention this.
Well, I'm glad you're questioning all of this, Bob, because, again, increasing basically their budget by 50%,
right,
it shows something. Somebody needs to question something to take a real hard look at what's going on.
And that's one of the functions I try to provide. Anytime we spend a significant amount of money, whether it's TMTA, the SORT program that we just spent $1.5 million on Chesney Park and Ward Mead Park, anytime we have significant expenditures like that, I look at them very closely. In many cases, nobody has in the past, unfortunately. But
yeah.
But let me say one more thing about TMTA. And they kept coming up. Everybody said, well, we've had 3 mil increase. We've had 3 mil levy for 15 years or 16 years or whatever. And the implication was, we never got any more money. But the fact is, the tax base grew 6%, 7%, 8% year after year.
Good point.
So,
good point.
In that case, you don't need to have a mill levy increase to get a 6%, 8%, or 10% increase every year in funding. So,
excellent point.
Yeah.
Bob Archer is my guest. And again, if you have a question or a comment, jim.cates@cjonline.com. Bob, the votes on your proposal. What was the vote?
On
the TMTA proposal cutting.
That went in the budget.
That was
when we had budget meetings on Monday night.
Okay.
And,
so this wasn't brought up Tuesday night as far as your 60-minute.
No, because I knew there was no consensus that
okay.
it would happen. I thought that would be a waste of time and everybody. But the city council is interesting because it's been my experience that there a group of city council members stressed the need for spending.
Mm-hmm.
And a group of city council members stress that we shouldn't be spending money. And I'm not being critical or judgmental by any means, but everybody has their constituency, everybody has an agenda, and some justify spending and others justify saving. So that's just the way the city council works, and it's balanced.
Yeah, and folks, if you were to take a look at the map of the city of Topeka, who represents what district, and take a look at party affiliations, none of this makes any sense as far as constituencies and party registrations. Because, again, with all due respect, Jeff Prisner, regular guest on the show, I like Jeff Prisner. Jeff and I don't agree on much. But Jeff represents a relatively affluent area of Topeka and is a registered Republican. Now, Jeff's a big spender, and I like Jeff. Jeff and I are going to disagree on a lot of Jeff's solutions. That doesn't have anything to do with lack of respect. I like him. But Jeff and I don't agree politically on much. But Jeff has been identified as being a big spender in affluent West Topeka as a Republican. Now, you've got, on the other hand, you've got John Ocklaw representing Oakland, Democrat representing Oakland, which is not a wealthy area of this community, is one of our more fiscally conservative members of the city council.
It is. Yeah.
You've got Walgast sitting out there, and again, in a relatively affluent district of Topeka. Now, Walgast is a Democrat, and his campaign was funded by the hierarchy of the who's who in the Democratic Party, basically got Larry Walgast elected. But he still represents a relatively affluent district of Topeka. So if you were to look at party affiliations and constituencies, you know, who's a fiscal conservative and who's a big spending liberal? Nah.
I know.
It's a wild one. Now, you are the exception to the rule because you are a registered Republican. You're in probably the most affluent district of Topeka, District 7, Southwest Topeka, and you are a fiscal conservative.
But the point is, Jim, the point is not that I'm from Southwest Topeka and it's an affluent area. The point is that we represent all of the city of Topeka. And in my opinion, everybody in the city of Topeka pays state and local taxes. And that's why I try to represent all the citizens in looking at money that's spent, that's taxpayer dollars. Mm-hmm. Hey, funny quick story about Jeff Preisner. I sit between he and Deborah Swank at the city council meeting. And early on, Jeff and I visit and everything. And after several months, Jeff turned to me and he said, you know, I just don't understand how you vote on different issues. And I said, Jeff, it's real simple. I watch what you do, and I always do the opposite.
You've learned well.
But I respect and get along with all the city council members, and I realize that they've got different constituencies, different agendas, and different philosophies. And I think we do balance each other out, and I think that there's more teamwork and more professionalism and friendliness in the group than there ever was before.
Yeah, and, you know, it's refreshing to see that the votes are going to be somewhat unpredictable. Because in the past, you know, with our past two groupings of city council members, and especially the immediate past, I mean, you knew it was going to be a 5-4 vote depending on who introduced the ordinance. It was going to be 5-4 one way or the other.
Right.
I mean, it was just right down the line. And the previous group, prior to that one, was about the same.
Right.
Frankly. So, you know, we've got some independent thinkers on this group. I want to talk about, if we could, performing arts.
Okay.
Because their budget was cut some. What would it take, basically, just to keep the doors open of the performing arts as far as making the utility payments, having somebody to answer the phone, if we've got this group that's coming through Topeka that wants to book TPAC for a night? The level of funding, how far could we cut it back? Because that basically, in essence, is all we're doing now.
Right.
In effect.
That is a good question. I know they have cut spending, and I think revenues are up. But the answer to that, I really don't know. I've never sat down and did an in-depth analysis of what it would take to keep the doors open. I think it's important that the TPAC is sustainable, that it continues to operate. I think it's a tremendous asset and a jewel for our city. But exactly what it would take, I don't know.
We've got a tremendous investment there.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to make sure that the integrity of the building is preserved and maintained. And
right.
I understand all of that. But really, we're not doing much as far as booking shows in there now because they're what they call four-wall productions.
Yeah.
That's where you've got, you know, a group that's coming across on I-70. They're working their way from Denver to Chicago. They've got an open night, so they're basically paying renting TPAC.
That's true. In the past, I think we have made financial commitments to where, you know, depending on attendance, we may lose money, we may make a little money, but now it is basically we're renting out the space.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things. I mean, it's just not, you know, acts that come. We actually have local events that are there, like Dance Factory and the ballet. I think they have a lot of wedding rehearsal dinners and receptions there. But you bring up a good question, and I really have not analyzed TPAC. I know that we cut their funding from 250 down to 170 or 80,000 for 2011. But my point is I want to make sure that it's sustainable and it continues to be in good condition. My wife and I went to the first performance at TPAC, I don't know, 18 or 20 years ago when it was refurbished. Do you remember who the entertainer was that came?
No, I remember who opened the Expo Center, but I don't remember who opened TPAC.
It was Jay Leno.
Oh, okay.
And it was a great show, and there was so much excitement. I want to make sure that it continues to be a tremendous asset that I think it is.
I agree, because it's too big of an investment. We can't shut it down. I understand that.
Right.
But we might be getting to the point, since we do need to cut back on some of the superlatives, if you will. Maybe just hiring somebody that's going to be there to unlock the door.
Yeah.
You know, when we've got whoever it is that's coming through Topeka.
I agree.
And they need to get backstage to set up.
Well,
I don't know how far we could cut, you know, staffing back, because again, it's never going to be a profitable center.
Right.
It's not going to be a profit center in the best of times, and I think we all recognize that. But we're not in the best of times now. We've got to cut spending.
Right. And I agree with you. I have to admit, full disclosure, I'm good friends with Scott Griffith, who is in charge of the board of TPAC, and he's a hard-nosed businessman. And I'm sure he will look at every opportunity that he can to make sure that it's efficient and effective.
I don't know Scott Griffith. What does he do?
Scott's the president of Intrust Bank here in Topeka.
Okay, I haven't met Scott Griffith.
He has just been elected. I think it's president of the board that they had there. And so I have a lot of confidence in Scott's ability to look at the operation to make sure it's efficient and effective. And wherever we can save money in that operation, we'll do it. But hopefully you can have Scott on your program to talk about TPAC. Again, he's at Intrust Bank, and I think he'd be a great guest, very knowledgeable, and tremendous contributor to Topeka and our growth and success. Is involved in a number of things, but if you want to talk to somebody about TPAC and what it will require and how we can make it better, Scott Griffith is your man.
All right. Got it down.
Okay.
John Arnold is here. Earl Glenn just walked in, so we're going to be talking about the top stories of the week here in a few minutes. A curious motion that you made, and again, Bob, I do recognize you as being one of the leading fiscal conservatives on our city council. You're very clear thinking and, you know, just so many good things to say about you, but you had one motion that really I was curious about that I think the city council had agreed, which surprised me. This was a very pleasant surprise, to cut social spending by 25%. Mm-hmm. Now, in the 11th hour, here comes a motion from City Councilman Bob Archer to increase that to a 10% reduction as opposed to 25%. Why?
Well,
what happened?
Okay. Well, that wasn't an 11th hour. I had discussed that in previous budget meetings and thought we had an opportunity to have a good discussion on our social services spending. But in my opinion, I thought 25% was too drastic. I thought 10% was appropriate, but 25% was too drastic. A lot of it, or some of it, was defensive. You know, I wanted to make sure TPAC was sustainable. We've got Rochester Cemetery and the Cemetery Association, and they're just dying to turn over the operation of the cemeteries to the city of Topeka, which I think would be a disaster. And then, to be honest, some of them were personal. For example, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, I've participated. My son's participated in Olathe for a number of years. We've got friends that benefited from housing and credit counseling. My mother-in-law, you know, participated in Meals and Wheels, and that was a great program. So I thought, and by the way, I made recommendations to cut spending much more than giving that back.
Yeah.
For example, I made a proposal, and I made a proposal the night before to save $1.3 million by having a little furlough program. It wasn't anything dramatic. It was a mild program that I couldn't get consensus for, so I brought it back up again at the budget meeting to have a furlough of 2 days Every 13 weeks, 2 days a quarter for all non-fire and non-police, that would have saved us $520,000. If I were king, that's what we would have done to save money and to offset the additional spending.
That would have been a half a mil because a mil is about $1 million, correct?
Yes, that's correct. So that, you know, I did propose, you know, that we restore some of the funding for the social service agencies because I thought 25% was too drastic, particularly when we were spending so much money on TMTA, on the SORT program, on everything else. I thought it was not proper and not fair to cut those social service agencies by that much.
Yeah, you know, the ideal solution, because I agree, I don't think we ought to be into funding social services near to the level we are. But a 25% reduction over a year's period of time, pretty dramatic. You know, the ideal solution, if something could have been passed to where it was going to be a 10% reduction every year for the next 10 years to wean them off of the public debt. But you can't do that. Because once you get into a new election cycle, you can't be making decisions now for incoming city members of the city council.
That's right.
I understand it.
That's right. We have to look at it year after year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line for me is I thought 25% was too drastic. I thought 10% was doable. To be honest with you, I was surprised I didn't get a second because I would have loved to have discussed the social service agencies and our commitment to them on a going forward basis. But it wasn't, and so I regret that.
Yeah. The next biggie coming up, I guess, would be the $2 million if Shawnee County, if they pick up the third vote, because right now, of course, Miller/Ansley are voting, looks like, to retain the $2 million, not turn this money over to the city.
Right.
Shelley Beeler, and again, was so clear thinking on the Bob Hecht settlement. Hopefully Shelley's going to be clear thinking on this one. Now, I live in the county. I live outside the city. I should be jumping up and down and saying, hey, hang on to this money. Don't give it to the city because it's going to lower our taxes.
Right.
But fair is fair. And this would be the only county out of 105 counties to where this is being done. So I just don't think the county, hopefully, has got a basis for keeping this money.
Yeah, again, there was a lot of controversy on, potholes, no pothole fixes, and that kind of thing. But to me, getting back, I hope the county commission does not cut our funding because our streets need a lot of work, and to be honest with you, we need every penny we can get to be dedicated to our streets.
You betcha. Johnny, you want to ask Bob a quick question before he takes off? If so, pull your mic in.
No, I wasn't going to ask a question. I just was going to suggest that if the county takes that $2 million, that ought to generate some annexation for places like Lake Sherwood. I think that would be a great thing to do.
You want to take him home with you? I just cut his mic off.
Permanently, I assume. Yeah. Well, I think that requires some legislation on the state level before we can proceed with that.
But, yeah, I'm afraid it does.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to upset Jim, that's for sure.
Well, that's the only reason the Sherwood Improvement District was created, basically, was to block annexation.
That's right.
And basically it was the fear of one county commissioner. And I'd like to see the Sherwood Improvement District go by the wayside. If we didn't have that constant fear of annexation, we could do away with the Sherwood Improvement District. Getting back to true consolidation of government, which we've talked about before, you know, this Consolidation Commission, when they came up with their consolidation plan that we voted on a few years ago, we went from 51 units of government down to 50. We eliminated one unit of government. That's not consolidation. That's just malarkey. Bob, always good to have you with us, my friend.
Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you. And, again, thank you for inviting me.
We'll do this on a regular basis.
Okay,
you do a great job.
Thank
you. I've got a tremendous amount of respect for the job you do.
Thank you,
Jim. Really appreciate his explaining how he votes. That was, I thought, very interesting. Just whatever Preisner wants to do, I go the other way.
John Arnold, Earl Glenn on deck. Stay tuned. I'm Jim Cates.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Topeka Collegiate, Topeka's only independent school, treats every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small-class learning environment guided by humanitarian principles. At Topeka Collegiate, children fall in love with learning. Enrollment is limited. Call 228-0490 or visit our website at topekacollegiate.org. Topeka Collegiate School, educating children for life.
Excuse me, why are you saving those old eyeglasses? You know the ones, stuck away in the desk drawer. Haven't been worn in years. Yeah, those. You should donate them to your local Lions Club. Lions Clubs have been collecting used eyeglasses for years. They'll take your old eyeglasses and recycle them for someone in need of proper eyewear. Call your local Lions Club for information on where you can donate your old eyeglasses. Lions Clubs International. We serve.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay. Jeremiah Bullfrogs, my home away from home, 29th and Wanamaker. Yep, I was there last night. What great food. And I know it's not chili season, folks, but boy, I'll tell you, if you're ever hungry for hot, spicy chili, you've got to check out Jeremiah Bullfrogs. I know they sell a ton of it in the winter. And occasionally somebody walks in there during the summer and orders it. I do. So, folks, check it out. Great food, great place to meet your friends and neighbors, 29th and Wanamaker, Jeremiah Bullfrogs. Good morning, Earl Glenn.
Good morning, Jim.
Been educating Mr. Arnold this morning. Well, we'll talk about this a little later on.
Slow going.
Liberals, left of center Republicans.
Well, he educates us, though, too, Jim.
Yes, he does.
Well, that, yeah. There has to be a receiver in addition to a transmitter.
Well, I watched Rachel Maddow and Keith Oberman just so we could talk today.
So. I'll tell you, I can watch Rachel because she's got a sense of humor. Oberman.
And she's perky, too. So.
Yeah, she is. But Oberman, no, I'm not going to go that far. Just angry. Just mean. Just, Let's talk about the top stories of the week. Earl Glenn, you're with us once every 3 weeks. And I want to ask you about, the primary election results at some point in time during the course of the hour. But let's start off with your top story of the week first.
Well, I was going to talk a little bit about the Rucker decision that the disciplinary administrator issued this week. And it's kind of a confusing story that, you know, where do you start? So I'll try to briefly say that in 2002, Phil Klein was elected, decided to enforce some abortion laws, and that turned into a big political legal battle over the years. And then in 2006, he was voted out of office, but he switched jobs with the then incoming Attorney General. So Phil Klein becomes Johnson County District Attorney. District Attorney Paul Morrison from Johnson County becomes Attorney General. So that goes on. Phil somehow continued his legal action against Planned Parenthood in Johnson County. That turned into yet another legal battle in the Supreme Court. And then by December of 2008, that kind of went away. But that court case went to hearing in May of 2009 and still hasn't been decided by the Supreme Court, which is kind of interesting. So meanwhile, this year, there was some actions taken against various attorneys that work for Phil. In the Board of Disciplinary Administrator, an action was taken against Eric Rucker. That followed one by Steve Maxwell a little bit earlier, and then there was an action filed against Phil himself. But anyway, in Eric's case, let's just focus on that because it's a very confusing story. In January, the complaint was filed against Eric. Eric's attorney said, well, what do you have on this case? So he went to the Board of Disciplinary Administrators and said, well, what do you have? Well, they received back over 22,000 pages of evidence that the disciplinary administrator had collected in Eric's case. And so Eric's attorney dug through that, and they found some exculpatory evidence that the disciplinary administrator had kind of left out of the complaint. And so that's almost an ethics violation just by itself. So right away, Eric's attorney filed a motion to dismiss, a motion to reconsider probable cause. And that really didn't go anywhere. But then also in that 22,000 pages that they found some evidence that one of the members of the hearing panel had connections to Dr. Tiller himself. And so they made a motion to, I can't remember the exact motion, to take that person off the hearing panel. Well, that didn't really go anywhere, but it points out the fact that these people that serve on these hearing panels, there's really no conflict of interest statements they file. There's really...
It should be, because all three of them, as I understand it, were contributors to Governor Sebelius.
Well, and
they were all three Democrats as well. This panel was stacked. But going back, you mentioned Planned Parenthood, which, as I understand it, had nothing to do with the Rucker-Maxwell suit, because what we're talking about here, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is the way that I've interpreted this story from day one. It dealt with our third trimester abortionist, George Tiller. Phil Klein wanted to obtain some medical records from Dr. Tiller dealing with...
They're medical reports. There's a distinction here.
Okay, medical reports. Basically, Phil Klein wanted names of children that were coming in for an abortion, because Phil basically, in essence, was saying that if a 12-year-old child is going in for a third trimester abortion, somebody impregnated that 12-year-old child, we have a crime.
And
we possibly have incest going on. We've got a next-door neighbor. We've got a problem in our community. We want to know who impregnated this child.
Want to scrutinize that, yes.
There has never been any names released of any women that went to George Tiller for an abortion. Nobody has been hurt. Nobody's been harmed. All Phil Klein was after were the names of the kids going in for an abortion, correct?
Well,
and that's basically what led up to Rucker being called in to testify,
really,
correct?
He had really two investigations going on. He had one for Dr. Tiller in Wichita and one in Planned Parenthood in Overland Park. Those are the two primary things. The Tiller thing gets most of the play. But by the time that these ethics filings had been made, there had been a grand jury investigating Planned Parenthood in Johnson County, and we'll get back to that at the very end of this when we talk about what Phil Klein's case is coming up in November. But anyway, getting back to the contributions, these hearing officers are supposed to be like district judges, and so they're not really supposed to be political animals at all. And you mentioned that they gave to Sebelius, but the other curious thing is, since this is kind of a Phil Klein case, one of the hearing panels on Eric's case gave to the two previous opponents of Phil Klein, who were Chris Biggs and Paul Morrison. So they had that on the committee. And then also she gave to Barack Obama in 2008, and she gave to Roger Goyle just last year. So she's a political animal, you know, serving on this hearing panel. So you'd hope that politics is out of this, but it really isn't. So they made various motions, and in March then, Eric's attorney objected to some of the language in the filings. It was just a little bit of political, and he objected in the introduction of unsupported, irrelevant, and specific allegations regarding disputed political matters. So here we have political matters getting into the case. So by late March, they actually had a stipulation between the parties that wasn't really known until May that, okay, they dropped all the allegations of dishonesty, fraud, and misrepresentation in that stipulation. But the things that were stipulated were that Eric had failed to, in a Supreme Court case talking about this, he didn't know that somebody in his office had kept this spreadsheet with some information on it that would have changed one of his answers to the Supreme Court. So someone in Attorney General Six's office found that, made that known. And so Eric could have possibly done more diligence, and so that's one of the things. I'm going way too long on this. And so anyway, the bottom line is Eric will be informally admonished. And so what that means is that there's something called the Kansas Reports. His name will appear in that publication that he's being informally admonished.
Well, you know, I thought this was a witch hunt from day one. And, again, admittedly, Eric Rooker is a good friend. And it all gets into this abortion issue. You know, Phil Klein, in this state, you know, he carried 40% of the vote after doing a credible job as Attorney General. He lost his reelection bid because of abortion. You know, it's such a polarizing issue. And this is a perfect example. Eric Rooker did absolutely nothing wrong. But, you know, he's been branded as being the disciple of Phil Klein. Therefore, where Klein goes, Rooker is going to be tainted with the same brush. And has been.
Can I make one more statement? That the Klein case is coming up in November, and there's actually two counts in that. The first count is very much like Eric, so you'd think a lot of that's going to go away. But the second count has to do with this grand jury in Johnson County. Somehow this nurse who was the head of that grand jury was also an attorney, and she filed some things that they thought were done incorrectly in that grand jury. So that's going to be new in November.
Yeah. But, you know, the pro-life community, I think, has done a poor job as far as image building on this, because from day one, Phil Klein, all he was attempting to do as far as the Rooker-Maxwell situation was to get names of adults that were impregnating kids. That's a bad deal. Whether you're pro-abortion, anti-abortion, whether you have no feelings whatsoever about abortion, that, in essence, is what this was all about. Kansas turned on Phil Klein.
Well,
because the pro-life community didn't do a very good job of explaining this. Or I think Phil Klein would have had the support of Kansans for what he was attempting to do with Tiller. And, again, if you were to poll the issue, 85% of Kansans are opposed to third trimester abortions. And the pro-life community, if they would focus on that, we could really make some inroads. Peggy Mast. All right, I want to talk about Peggy because she had a bill a couple of years ago. Basically, there was an abortion center in Wyandotte County, absolutely filthy. Two police detectives from Kansas City, Kansas, went in to investigate a burglary complaint. The place was so filthy, they refused to sit down. This was in the waiting area. I mean, it was just absolutely filth. Peggy brought pictures into the show, and I'm sure you've seen the pictures as well. Horrible, horrible conditions. There were fetuses in the kitchen where the employees were eating, and unbelievable situation. So at any rate, Peggy is an advocate of, you know, the pro-life community, strong pro-lifer, introduced a bill basically that said, if you're going in for an abortion, we want to make sure you're going into a sanitary clinic. That's it. Peggy wasn't trying to stop one abortion. What she was attempting to do was to stop the potential death of a woman going in for an abortion as a result of infections being aborted in some of these filthy clinics. But because Peggy Mast had the reputation of being pro-life, that bill went down to defeat, and it was voted on philosophical lines. If you were pro-life, you were supporting Peggy Mast saying we want to clean up abortion clinics. Mm-hmm. If you were pro-choice, you were voting, nope, we want our abortion clinics to remain filthy. You know, it shows how polarized we've become on this issue, and to me that is the poster child of polarization is what happened on the vote.
Well, I don't see that getting better.
One of the big arguments.
John, your turn.
I
was just going to say, one of the big arguments for Roe v. Wade, I remember way
Pull your mic in.
Way back in the early 70s when Roe v. Wade was out there, one of the arguments was to make it possible to get people who, women who wanted an abortion, to keep them out of back alleys where they would get an abortion with some guy using a coat hanger. And, you know, so cleaning up abortion clinics seems to me to make a whole lot of sense. Too bad that didn't go.
Yeah. It didn't pick up one pro-choice vote, not
That's
one.
Something. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I mean, it defies, that bill truly defied logic. You would think the pro-choice community would have jumped all over this one because there was nothing hidden in this bill. There was no hidden amendment, you know, no hidden agenda. It says if you are going in for an abortion, we want to make sure that you're going into a sanitary, clean facility, period.
Yeah. sure makes sense. Yeah. And I think the issue of Klein getting the medical reports, I think there was some fear that he would be releasing names of people who were maybe even underage people coming in. And I think that fear probably was unfounded, but nevertheless it was a privacy issue that goes right along with
it. But there's never been a name divulged?
Never. That I'm aware of,
It's a huge political issue, though, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. No question.
Yep, absolutely. John, let's get into your top story of the week, and I'm delighted to see that Eric Rucker, you know, is getting... Well, he's off. He's off.
Well, that's the lightest admonishment he can get, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
So he's through. Yeah. Hopefully, Steve Maxwell is going to.
Well, his case is infinitely or is postponed until Klein's thing, so it's not clear that'll even happen.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that Earl just mentioned is that there were 22,000 pages, and somebody was flipping through and noticed some inconsistencies. The thing that flashed back in my mind was Attorney General of New Orleans, Jim Garrison, back in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, investigating.
I was just flipping through the 27 volumes of the Warren Report, and I noticed some inconsistencies on the assassination of JFK. Yeah, 27 volumes. I mean, 22,000 pages is about 22 James Mitchell-length novels, each one of which takes about 3 months to read.
It's huge.
You know, and...
I'm glad incredible. I didn't have that job.
Oh, I can't imagine anybody, no one person can.
Yeah.
In any kind of timely fashion.
Let's talk about your top story of the week.
I think the county settlement with Hecht is just awful.
Unbelievable.
So the $100,000 I read.
Well, not only that. John, you explained it because we covered this between 8 and 8:30 this morning.
Oh, did you?
And Bob Archer and I touched on it, but let's do it again because this is an unbelievable story.
Crime doesn't pay unless you're DA.
Earl, while John's explaining it...
I know a little bit about the story.
Okay, now Bob Hecht served for 8 years as our district attorney in Shawnee County. These are the figures on his overtime pay, what was paid to Bob Hecht during the 8 years.
Total of 440, was it?
481, but just watch the stair step up. Yeah. Okay, now, John, explain.
Well, I'm sitting there. I can't imagine settling for $100,000, a $482,000 bill. But I think the final paragraph in the Cap Journal story today was a quote from Hecht said in his statement. If there was a concern as to either the procedure or how the amounts were determined, the county had 8 years and 334 opportunities to express such concerns, but in fact, each and every payment was reviewed and approved by the county clerk, the audit finance department, and the county commission. And I'm betting that when they got sitting down to say things, you're going to have each one of those people say, oh, yes, I knew about it, and I told Commission Chairman Vic Miller about it, and he said, well, just forget it, he's the DA, or something like that. And that happened 334 times. It had to happen at some point in that eight-year period of time. Somebody had to say, hey, this is a problem. With all those people looking at it, I think that was Hecht's defense, and I think that's why Vic Miller said, I don't think we can win this thing. Well, I think more than that, Vic Miller would lose. The county commission would lose. They'd lose big time.
Because Earl Glenn on this story, Bob Hecht, of course, was defeated in the primary by Eric Rucker. We were just talking about Eric Rucker. Eric Rucker defeated Bob Hecht in the primary. This was not a campaign story.
Right.
This surfaced after we elected Chad Taylor, who went on to defeat Eric in the general election. And Chad asked the question of our county commission, how much can I make if I work a little overtime? I see Bob Hecht knocked down $127,000 last year in overtime pay. How do I get my hands on this? And that's when the county commission no longer could just look the other way. They'd been caught because for 8 years, our county commissioners, and Shelley Beeler had only been on the commission 2 years. So this was our previous county commissioners, Miller and what have you. For 8 years, either A, looked the other way or didn't know where to look. Because you're right, every one of these vouchers, and Hecht, it was legalized thievery.
Yeah.
Bob Hecht, in my opinion, has no moral values whatsoever to have done this to the Shawnee County taxpayers. But what he did was technically legal, and our county commission was asleep at the switch. And I think the last paragraph of the story, as you pointed out, John Arnold, pretty much nails it.
You bet.
But here's the thing about the settlement. Bob Hecht walked away with $481,000. Now, the settlement's $100,000, $50,000 of which is going to be paid by the insurance company, the bonding company. Old Republic Surety, I think, is writing a check for $50,000. Bob Hecht agreed to write a check for the other $50,000 after he's dead. He's going to be writing a check from the grave to pick up the remaining $50,000.
He gets to put it in a CD, and he gets the interest until he's dead, and then the principal goes to the county, as I understand it.
Why would they do that?
God only knows.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in terms of a settlement.
Yeah.
Now, were there legal fees? I never saw in the story the legal fees that the county might have incurred on this so far.
I haven't heard that either.
Yeah.
Jim, I'm hoping that whoever wrote this story and follows that up, is it Rencher?
Well, Michael and Tim Rencher both have been all over the story. Tim's going to be on the show Monday, and that's going to be, yeah.
I hope one of that the there have been some depositions taken in preparation for this lawsuit, and that those depositions will be acquired through the Freedom of Information Act, because they'll dummy up while the thing is pending litigation. After it's settled, those things ought to be
public. Open up, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we ought to find that the county clerk, the finance chairman, other people said, yes, we saw those 6 years ago, and we told Vic Miller and we told the commission chairman, whoever it was, about it. And we've got a lot of former officials who, former finance director, former treasurer, former county clerk, who are in the mix, and I'm sure their depositions are going to be a lot different than the guys that are currently working for the county commission.
Yeah.
And those stories need to come out. And I'm just hopeful that the Cap Journal, in its usual way of pursuing the Freedom of Information Act, will do that.
I hope you're right.
We need the whole story.
There was anything that, as part of the court, there was anything filed, that was sealed at the end, was there?
Not that I'm aware of. Not in the stories, anyway.
Wasn't in the story. So apparently not. But I think the reporter pretty much nailed it, that it was an embarrassment and should be to our county commissioners.
You're not kidding.
You know, for falling, they were just asleep at the switch. Bob Hecht, obviously a tremendous embarrassment, although once again, Bob Hecht is walking away with the full $481,000. But how can you buy off on the fact that, you know, when I'm dead, I'll pay you back?
That I don't understand at all.
After my death, you'll get your money.
I want some deals like that.
Tell you, if I get in trouble, you know, Bob Hecht might be a good lawyer to call. he's managed to get out of this one $500,000 richer. Just an incredible, incredible story.
Yeah, it truly is. So that's clearly the big story, and I don't think it's over yet. I think Mike Hall and Trencher need to pursue it further. But anyway, we've got some kind of piece of the story out there, and you can draw your own conclusions about how it all happened.
Yep. Earl, I've been reading some of your blogs. Not blogs, it's reporting. And let's give out your web address.
Oh, KansasWatchdog.org.
Yeah. And one of them dealt with stimulus.
We've done several stimulus stories.
Yeah.
And the one that you're referring to is several weeks ago came out that SRS here in Kansas was going to give $500 for back-to-school expenses to 11,000 families, which that all sounds very well and good, but the purpose of the stimulus was to create jobs. And this was all supposed to be done with all sorts of transparency and accountability. So I put in an open records request to SRS to find out, well, who are those 11,000 people?
Who qualifies?
Who qualifies. And so it came back that there's a program that's already in existence called the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And so what they did is they just picked people that were already on their list, primarily to minimize the amount of enrollment time that they had to spend and minimize outreach and just get the money spent. And so they're really, we'll never know. The open records request was denied on confidentiality grounds, that we just won't get to find out who those people were. So I've received several pieces of email about that since then, and beating up on me for attacking the poor. Well, that wasn't my intent at all. I was really trying to look at open government or just good government and transparency on the issue. One of the emails came back and said, well, $5,000 for a family of three, which is one of the criteria, works out to $4.60 a day. So he said my story should be $4, or that should be my story.
$5,000 or $500?
Well, they gave $500 in this grant, but it was only to people that in theory only had $5,000 a year of income.
Oh, wow.
Or less. So it's a really, really low. But see, they didn't put that in the original story.
Exactly. Okay.
But again, and so this one email said, well, why don't you attack the rich? Well, I'm trying to look at just stimulus money across the board.
Sure.
This is just the next one that came.
Where were the jobs that were created?
There were no estimates of jobs from that at all.
Yeah.
It's, if you buy commodities someplace along the line, something is created and somebody has to do it.
Well, and there's no checks and balances here that the legislature normally would be in our state authorizing the expending of money, and this just sure. came in from the feds and it just went out, and there's very little oversight on it.
Yeah, and you wonder who gets to determine who gets the money and who doesn't. And
was in an election year, that raises, that's what I was going to look for, but I will be doing that.
Yeah.
John, just get that as close as you can. For some reason, we're just not
hearing me, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Okay, that's a little better.
That's, it's questionable stimulus, isn't it?
Well, there's new stimulus data that came out right at the end of last month, and I have not analyzed all the Kansas data yet, so there's other things to be found in there. So
these 11,000 needy families were all over Kansas?
All over Kansas. Okay. Now, KDHE did finally, on my request, give me a list of the number by county. And so Sedgwick County had the largest number, followed by, I think, Shawnee County was second. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, there was good geographic distribution, and that seemed to be the case. I didn't want to see too many in Leawood, Kansas, so, you know.
Of course. Not likely. But, you know, Shawnee County has an awful high proportion, it seems to me, of disabled and handicapped, you know, blind, because we have so many facilities here that help and serve them. And I don't know what the proportion is in Sedgwick County, but I'm pretty sure, well, because they're three times our size.
When to compare, yeah, I couldn't compare. The numbers seemed reasonable, though.
Okay, all right. Interesting.
But almost every county had at least one recipient. Or I think every county had at least one recipient. But some of them only had like one.
So all 105 counties were touched.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting story. Something I'd love to see Kansas Watchdog cover. Love to see the Capital Journal cover it. Love to see John Arnold cover it in the blog. Going back to primary election day. Douglas County. Kingman County, by the way, led the pack as far as voter turnout. Percentage of voters, it was Kingman County, a county that's 30 miles west of Wichita. I think the two counties, I believe, are contiguous. But at any rate, they had in excess of a 50% voter turnout in Kingman County. At the other end of the spectrum, Douglas County, 11% voter turnout.
But part of that's by the local races. So Kingman must have had a really hot state rep race or some other race out there that it drew people in. Do you know what that might have been?
No. And I'm sure there was a hot local race, but the point being, we had a lot of hot statewide races.
Well, yeah, the U.S.
On
Senate.
On both sides.
U.S. Senate, right.
Yeah, and Secretary of State.
Well, even Congressional and Second
Congressional,
District.
Congressional, yeah, which turned out, well, we'll talk about that one in a few minutes. But what I would love to see, because out of our 105 counties, and Earl Glenn, you're probably aware of this, historically, on general election day, Johnson County is going to be toward the bottom in terms of voter turnout. Now, if you're taking a look at educational levels of education in our counties, my perception is, and I've never seen any figures on this, my perception would be Douglas County probably would be number one in the state in terms of, you know, education achievements. I would think Douglas County would lead the pack. Raleigh County, not so, because you've got a lot of military in Raleigh County. But Douglas County, you know, it's a very affluent. With KU there, I would think the level of education would be probably number one. Closely followed by Johnson County would probably, in my opinion, be number two. Number three might be Ellis County because Fort Hays State, yeah, is a very, very prominent player. But again, I'm just guessing. But if you take a look at the levels of education and put it on a graph, you know, in terms of voter turnout, you would think the levels of education, the higher the level of education, the higher voter turnout you're going to have.
But it doesn't
work out that way. Why?
But in Douglas County, you've got such a strong Democratic presence, and if you don't have a lot of Democratic races there, you had some, but in a primary election, Democrats in Kansas often don't have a lot to choose from.
Well, so Republican registrations, again, Douglas County, if you take a look at registration.
There's still a fair number
of
yeah.
Republicans. Now, they're not Republicans as you and I view Republicans. But they are registered. They've
from
got the
liberal wing of the Republican
yes.
Party. Right?
Indeed, but they are there. You know, the Sandy Prager Republican wing of the Republican Party is alive and well in Douglas County. So, I don't know. I'd just love to see that. You know, the 105 counties, I'd love to see some type of a charting on levels of education, education achievement. And then to tie that in with Election Day, general election day, voter turnout. I think it would be...
Well, I'll see if the census gives me that education data, and then we'll see what we can do with that.
Yeah, could be interesting.
It would be.
Could be interesting.
And, of course, primary is going to be different than general.
Right, exactly.
And,
They're very different.
And when you're talking about Douglas County, as Glenn, Earl was saying, that if there aren't any great races in Douglas County, then the turnout's going to be low in primary.
Well, historically, in Wyandotte County, more people show up in the city elections than they do August elections because Wyandotte County is the other county that's primarily Democratic. They don't have anybody to vote for in August, but they have lots of things to vote for in the spring.
There you go. Yeah.
So it's an outlier from that standpoint.
Yeah. But really, we had no hot local race
in
Shawnee County. Nothing was going on here. You know, as far as a localized election, Shelley Beeler, Shelley's an independent. We had a Republican primary for county commissioner of two unknowns running. So there really was nothing here whatsoever that would have gotten voters out other than, you know, our national, state, and national races. In Shawnee County, we far surpassed Douglas County. You know, I think we ran 26-27% voter turnout?
Something like that, probably.
Yeah. But the study you're proposing actually would look at primary versus general and education, because I think you'll get a different answer. I think the general might be closer to what you're looking for, but in the
primary
just doesn't happen.
But that was just kind of a wake-up call when I saw the figure that Douglas County finished 105th out of 105 counties. And I thought, you know, what if we were to chart this and put it on a graph?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know how Douglas County fares, frankly. You know, in general election turnout, I have no idea.
I don't remember this historically either.
But I do know Johnson County has never been at the top, you know, and usually somewhere toward the bottom. And maybe it's because of the transient population that just really doesn't feel like they're a part of the community.
Well, we have a huge advance vote now. I was an election worker in 2008, and starting at 6 o'clock when the polls opened, we were busy till like 8:15, but 8:15 and later it was almost nothing. There was really no rushes after work, and so there's just a huge advance vote in Johnson County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe Johnson Countyans, do they really feel that they're a part of Kansas? Are they Kansans in Johnson County, or are they Kansas Cityans?
I think there's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I mean, I've worked with some people that moved into the state. If you moved in, you're probably a Kansas Cityan, and you embrace both states as much. I mean, since I was from Kansas, I looked at that line, you know, and it makes a difference on what side of the line I'm on. So.
Yeah. Well, you're starting to cover a congressional race in Missouri, the 4th District.
A little bit.
Which is going to be an interesting race. This
is the Ike Skelton.
Yes.
Area. Yeah.
Ike Skelton. Yeah, been around forever, 50 years, I think, or close to it, in terms of legislative service.
Is that district all the way down the western border?
No, it goes right down to what county is Carthage, Missouri, and Carthage and Joplin. That's a different congressional district.
Oh, it is.
You're around Springfield, right?
Yeah, it goes down to Lamar. Clinton would be in the 4th district. It goes as far north as Richmond, Ray County, Lexington, south of the Missouri River, Marshall, what have you.
Okay.
It just kind of surrounds Kansas City on the south and the east, but doesn't go all the way down to Arkansas.
Okay.
And it's primarily a Republican, rural Republican district.
Rural, yeah.
That's been held by Ike Skelton, who's had the reputation over the years as being a moderate/conservative Democrat. Well, Ike's getting a little long in the tooth. Voted with Obama one too many times on a stimulus bill, and he's being challenged by a very, very serious contender, apparently.
Yeah. Well, getting back to Kansas, the Neufeld race was quite, I can't remember the guy's name, can't think of the name,
the 21-year-old former president of the Washburn University student body. Yeah.
But he won handily. I mean, I saw that when just a few precincts were in and said, hey, it's going to be hard to change. And it's really like a young versus old battle in that thing.
Okay. Well, you know, I kind of equate that. Neufeld's defeat to Phil Klein's defeat for attorney general, because Phil Klein was defeated. He lost a $90,000 a year job when he was defeated for attorney general. So he goes to Johnson County and gets a $150,000 job. And, well, the same thing is going to happen to Neufeld as far as moving up the food chain. Now, members of the House and members of the Senate draw equal pay, But the Senate, that's where the power and the prestige is, supposedly, more so than the House. So Melvin Neufeld, in all probability, even though he got beat, 68-32, I think, was
it's pretty handily, yeah.
Yeah.
You think he'll be appointed to the...
Yes. Precinct people would vote him in, but that's after November. I mean, Kuhl's camp still has to win first, which is probably a foregone conclusion. But they have to wait until he wins until they certify the election before they can schedule that other...
Yes. And right now, your county chairpersons, I believe, are frozen on making precinct committee appointments. So whoever was elected in August, I think those appointments are frozen.
There's different rules by counties on the reorg meetings. I mean, so you elected new precinct people, and by county, they will have a county reorganization meeting. So you'd have to go out and look at all those counties out there.
So if you wanted that Senate seat...
Well, I'm sure there's people looking in every county making sure that...
You could be campaigning right now, getting your people appointed as precinct committee persons. Because that's how I ended up serving in the state Senate. That Ron Hine stepped down early. And to make a long story short, the state party asked if I would come in and run for the seat. Because we were right in the middle of an election. Alicia Salisbury was the candidate. Everybody knew Ron Hine wasn't running again, so Alicia Salisbury was lined up to run. And with Ron Hine's unexpected resignation, a half a dozen people came out of the woodwork that were running for this seat to fill a six-month unexpired term. Now, the Senate had long since adjourned. There was nothing to do except sit back and draw a $500 a month paycheck. So we had six people out, knocking on doors, campaigning for this Senate seat, which meant nothing whatsoever. And the state party, because I was county chairman of the Republicans at the time, they said, would you step in and run for this? Because if you run, you'll run everybody else out of the race, which is what happened. So I was a state senator for 6 months, and the precinct committee people elected me. And in that 6 months, I got to make one appointment, and it was to take a look at city-county consolidation.
Oh, boy.
So I picked the most conservative person I knew, Betty Pistorius, and she was my only pick, my only appointment while I was a state senator. And,
boy, you really earned your pay in that
yes,
6 months,
did.
Didn't you?
Loved
now,
it.
You were in the legislature longer than that, though, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in the legislature for 2 terms,
four years.
Yeah, that was a little later on.
I hadn't heard the Senate story, so that's curious.
I'm one of two people in Kansas that actually has worked their way down from the state Senate into the House and then out. Yeah. Not many of us, but getting back to Neufeld, precinct committee people will make that appointment. They are going to elect Hills Camp's replacement. That's the way it works, folks. So if you have a chance to serve as a precinct committee person in your district, wherever you live, in Shawnee County, Raleigh County, Pottawatomie, wherever you happen to be residing, take advantage of it. Because over the past 30 years, I can come up with at least a half a dozen races in Shawnee County, a half a dozen early retirements, early resignations, to where the precinct committee people, a handful of people, have elected a replacement to serve until the next general election. So there's a lot of power, potential power.
We had two of them in just January of this year in Johnson County, because Terry Huntington was a state rep. She became a state senator, and then when she became that, the House seat opened up, and then Barbara Beaulieu became the state rep. So within 2 weeks, we had two of them in Johnson County.
Screwed it up on both occasions, by the way. I haven't met either one of these people, but their voting records are not stellar.
From a conservative standpoint, that's correct. But it is Mission Hills and that eastern part of Johnson County. So.
But I remember back when I was in the legislature, Mission Hills actually had a fiscal conservative, Al Lane, in the House. And Al was pretty strong fiscal conservative. Well, I don't know how strong he was. He was on the back bench with me. Nobody was paying much attention to him either. But at least we were voting right.
Yes.
Let's get your analysis on, since we're into primary elections. You haven't been on since the primary election. Anything that surprised you, Earl Glenn, because you're a Johnson County resident? You were looking at this through a little different eyes.
Well, I was really trying to look at it statewide, and I was telling you before the show, but for the first time since 1996, I stayed home. I watched three TVs and I had two computer monitors, so I got to see what I wanted to see pretty much.
Wow.
I think it's Tom Arpke out in Salina knocked off an incumbent there. I can't remember the name.
Dina Horst.
Mm-hmm. And then also in our area, Jane Quigley was knocked off by, forgetting the first name of the woman. So that was a little bit of a surprise, a couple upsets. But overall, the mixture won't be a lot different for the legislature. There's some speculation there might be a race for the speaker. I guess whether that's idle or not, I just don't know.
It's going to be Neufeld. But here's another story that came out of Johnson County, John Arnold, one that you and I should be paying particular interest, and hopefully the Capital Journal is going to pick up on this as well. You know, I've been in this community since 1975. 35 years I've lived in Topeka. Historically, as far as election night celebrations, this is the heartbeat in Topeka, Kansas.
Well, it's for the state, too, so usually.
Yeah, no longer the heartbeat. Where was the action primary election night in the state of Kansas on the Republican side of the ledger? Democrats didn't do anything, by the way. But on the Republican side of the ledger, you know, historically, catty-cornered from this studio, catty-cornered from this building at the Ramada Inn, that has historically been the gathering, the watering hole for Republicans on election night. The last two election cycles, we seem to have lost that to Johnson County.
Well, Johnson County, and I guess Central County, because of the Tea Heart down there, they showed that on TV, so there was a big party down there. But
you had everybody in Johnson County. I mean, you
but
had
Brownback was there,
yeah.
And
I was at the Brownback headquarters election night here in Topeka. Now, Sam's wife Mary was there, but all of the heavy hitters were in Johnson County.
Yeah.
And we've kind of let that slip away from us here in Topeka. You know, this is the state capital.
Well,
and it should be happening here.
Well, partly, though, it's the Ramada is owned by Jim Parrish, and Jim's a very active Democrat. And
you've got John Q. Hammond's Hotel, though, down by the Expo Center that is Republican-owned.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there's other alternatives. And I understand not going to the Ramada because of Jim Parrish.
Sure.
But we could be going to the Expo Center.
But surely in November there will be something here, don't you think?
I hope we can get it back. With all due respect to Johnson County, obviously you're doing something right.
Well, I stayed home. I did my part now.
I noticed coming in that there was a news conference going on in front of the Curtis building with Sam Brownback was there with all the media gathering around, so he was doing something today, this morning. I had not heard about it in advance, but I looked and said, well, what are all the cameras doing there? And then I saw Sam, so I said, okay, Sam, he's doing something.
Was his big bus there?
I didn't see it.
Because I don't know if you see the blog Dome on the Range, which is a lefty blog, and it's kind of anonymous. We don't know who's behind it.
Really?
But they had a picture of the license tag on Sam's bus, and it was from Arkansas. So they poked a little bit of fun at him for
really?
That.
Oh, really? That is interesting.
You would think they got a Kansas bus, but...
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, you have Winfield Bus Services, I think. I'm sure there's
a lot of bus
interesting.
Services around, yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Dome on the Range, huh? And it's an Arkansas bus.
Well, I saw it personally, but I didn't take the picture, so somebody else got the picture.
Earl Glenn, since you live in Johnson County, can you do anything with Dick Bond? You know, if the Democrats were going to have a most valuable Democrat of the decade, it would be Republican Dick Bond. He probably has been responsible for electing more Democrats than any other person I can think of in the state of Kansas. And he's about to do it again. You know, I'm scared to death that Dick Bond is going to elect Chris Biggs. And all signs, all indications are that's where Bond is headed again. When I was in the legislature, by far and away, the most effective legislator, and I don't know who would have been a distant second, would have been Dick Bond, an extremely intelligent individual. And truly, if there was a rhino, he's to the left of the rhinos, but he was the poster child when I was in the legislature for a Republican in name only. Well, he's still there in name only, but boy, I'll tell you, he has really flipped to the
far left.
Well,
he's working behind the scenes. I don't really know Dick personally. I was kind of surprised that Libby Inslee didn't do better in the Secretary of State's race. I thought she would have got a little bit higher percentage than she did, so that's kind of I can't explain that. So it's not clear how the Biggs Kobach race is going to turn out right now.
I mean, I think Inslee was, she ran as a competent election administrator. And
Because she has all the skills, she has all the experience,
absolutely.
So I really thought she would have done better.
Very competent, very qualified.
The other guys ran as politicians, you know. And, you know, when they're out there saying, I want to be Secretary of State, I'm pro-abortion or pro-life or whatever, whoever they were, unrelated, you know.
Well, and J.R. Clays did spend $300,000 of his own money, and he did win a lot of races out in the Salina area, which is his home turf.
Okay.
But I just still thought Inslee would have done better in other parts of the state.
You know, and maybe it really boiled down to leadership, because I've known Libby Inslee for 30 years. I like her. I have a tremendous amount of respect for her clerical skills, you know, managing an office. She's done it very, very effectively. In fact, Chris Kobach was on the show 3 weeks ago. And I asked Chris, you know, if you win this, what are you going to do with Libby Inslee? And he says, hopefully keep her on. She's done
a good job. Oh, yeah, she's very, very good.
Yeah, and Chris had nothing but good things to say about Libby Inslee. But if you take a look at that race, the way I view it, it really was a race of leadership, because I think everybody would have been comfortable with Libby Inslee's clerical skills. But this state, we still don't have voter identification. You still don't have to show voter ID when you go in to vote, because we have never had a Secretary of State that had the leadership skills to get this passed with a veto-proof majority. You know, we've got the potential of voter fraud out there because of so many loose laws on the books. And hopefully that's the reason Kobach won. People really view Chris as being this leader that actually is going to get something done on needed law changes. I don't know.
So, I mean, Chris has been criticized that he's going to stop voter fraud when there's not a lot of evidence of voter fraud, but there's a huge potential in various areas. I've written several stories just about the number of voters on the rolls we cannot take off because of federal law. And so there's about 8 to 10% of the voters on the rolls. You mail them something, it will come back. We don't know where these people live, but they can still vote. So there's this huge potential and no check and balance. So the ID would be that check and balance.
What's the federal law that won't allow you to take those off the rolls?
It's the helping. I don't know which exactly. It's like Helping America Vote Act or the one before that.
Right.
That just because prior to like 2006, if you missed two presidential elections, they could just take you off. But now, once you miss two presidential elections, it starts a process which then can take 2 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So you could be gone four or six years, and you can still be on the rolls.
Interesting.
By the way, Tim Richer, reporter downstairs, Earl Glenn, and he's going to be on the show Monday, as he is each and every Monday, just emailed us, and he said he checked with the county counselor's office and learned the county's payment to three outside attorneys that got involved in the Heck case totaled just under $18,000. So
it wasn't as high as I thought it might have been then.
Yeah. Okay. Very good, and we'll look forward to having Tim on Monday. He's a great
He'll have all
guest.
The details then.
You betcha. But at any rate, Dick Bond's done a tremendous amount of harm, too.
Well, and there was a story about how the Biggs race and the Kobach race might be pretty tight, but I didn't quite get the analysis because the moderates didn't vote for Libby, so why wouldn't... I mean, they were trying to say that Kobach might be weak in November, but if the moderates still voted for Chris in August, why wouldn't that transfer to November? I don't quite get it.
I guess my thoughts on that would be the moderates have a history of voting for Chris Biggs. They certainly did when Chris Biggs ran against Phil Klein. They've been there before. You know, they've cast one vote for Chris. Why not cast?
But the unwritten story there is Chris Biggs was outspent by Dr. Tiller in his own race for attorney general back in 2002. That's the unwritten story, that Dr. Tiller spent almost $300,000 on that race. Chris Biggs spent, I don't remember what the numbers were, maybe half that.
Yeah.
So while he may have appeared to have done very well against Klein, it really wasn't his doing. It was this outside force that's not there right now. So
$300,000, that's not going to
be there. It's not clear how that will really turn out.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be an interesting November election, statewide and nationally. Very much. Very much so.
You bet. Oh, and so many cases. Earl Glenn, surprise. Were there any big surprises?
Well, the Neufeld thing, I think, was the biggest one.
That was the biggest? Yeah.
I was totally off my radar. Such a young guy. I looked him up on Twitter. He had, like, a lot of followers on Twitter. I don't know whether he uses new media. I haven't really talked to the guy, but he seemed to have had quite an effective campaign down there.
Yeah. Huh. Well, Bob Beatty was on the show. Bob's on once every other month, you know, and we discussed state and national politics, and Bob had this young man in his class, and Bob had nothing but good things to say about the guy that beat Neufeld. And boy, I'll tell you, my mind.
I think it's just hard work, is it?
I can't think of his name.
Yeah,
I can't come up with
a
kid's
too.
Name. But one of the biggest surprises for Bob Beatty, and John, you and I have talked about this, and one of my biggest surprises, primary election night, again, goes back to the Lynn Jenkins race.
Oh, yeah, the number of votes against her.
Yeah, 57% for Jenkins. And you had an unknown senator from the far northeast corner of Kansas that knocks down 43% of the vote with no money and virtually no name identification. And hopefully that's going to be a wake-up call for Lynn that, you know, there's a strong conservative base out here. You better start appealing to it.
One of the enigmas for me was my home county is Pottawatomie County. And the pro-life people, Kansas for Life in particular, came out very strongly for Tehart. Well, Moran won Pottawatomie County, but Pyle won Pottawatomie County. So I there's a disconnect there. It just doesn't make sense. Because Pyle only won, I think, Pottawatomie County. Was only county.
Is that
four.
Right?
Yeah. Quite a race. You know, in Tehart and Moran, if you were watching the polling numbers and tracking the polling, you know, 6 weeks out, you know, Moran had this 20-point lead. 3 weeks out, Moran had a 14-point lead. 10 days out, Moran had a 7-point lead, and he wins by 5 points. So, you know, obviously the momentum was shifting over to Tehart. And it's so easy to Monday morning quarterback. But I guess if I was running the campaign, you know, taking a look back through the rearview mirror, what I would have done, I would have gotten off the negatives.
Way too negative. Both ways.
Absolutely, because both of these guys had good voting records. You know, if there was an Achilles heel for Moran, leadership. You know, which way is the wind going to blow tomorrow? That's the way I'm going to vote, although his voting record was good. Tehart was perceived as being stronger in leadership qualities. But there was no difference on the votes. You know, both of them made goofy votes at some point in time on the immigration issue. And, you know, but if Tehart would have showcased, starting about 3 weeks out, that Sarah Palin has endorsed me, Sean Hannity has endorsed me, you know, and just coming up with all of the right-of-center conservatives that had endorsed Tehart, because the movement clearly was going in that direction. It was shifting in that direction. Now, tell me who the true conservative in this race is. And stayed away from mentioning Jerry Moran's name. Might have pulled it off.
Yep. Although, you know, you just never know how much weight Sarah Palin holds. This past week she was quoted as having said, she's a conservative, like Washington and Jefferson were conservatives. I said, they weren't conservative. They were revolutionary.
Slightly different time.
If you were a conservative in 1776, you were a Tory. My goodness, anyway. So, you just don't know.
What do you do with Palin? You know, there was a suggestion made. Dave Jackson just walked in, and a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about lawn and garden issues. So, if there's something that you have a question on, folks, email us at jim.cates@cgonline.com. The best suggestion I heard, you know, dealing with Sarah Palin, for those of us that are right-of-center conservatives, why not make her the national committee woman? You know, for the Republican Party. She's non-electable, I think. I don't know how you all view it.
I guess that election is in January, isn't it?
Yeah, because she's certainly has demonstrated the ability to draw large crowds.
Yep.
She's demonstrated the ability to draw large sums of money and probably is unelectable now because of stepping down early as governor.
That does kind of look bad. So.
Yeah, so I don't know. And my concern is Mitt Romney has got this nomination pretty much locked up in 2012. We shall see.
Oh, sure. I like the story that Levi Johnson wants to run for mayor of Wasilla.
Yes.
And the current mayor said, I think he'd be better off getting his high school degree and a job. I think the public would appreciate that.
I missed
more.
That. That's good. Yes.
Well, the mayor was pretty nice about it. I mean, he wasn't being too sarcastic.
Levi pretty much defines white trash going Hollywood.
Boy, you know, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Get his own reality show. I'm running for mayor.
Earl, we will see you in 3 weeks, my friend.
See you.
Always good to have you on.
Thank you very much.
And again, KansasWatchdog.org. And check it out, folks. You know, I'm checking it out now on a twice-a-week basis, and you do a great job.
Thank you. Good stuff there.
And
good stuff.
Paul Sutar
is my counterpart down in Wichita.
Yep. You all do a great job. John, blog's coming up next week.
I've got one next week that I'm taking a riff off of a David Brooks column from a couple of weeks ago where he was looking at the difference, you know, how the fact is that we all espouse we want smaller government, and yet during the Bush administration he created 843 new agencies, and during this health care creates another 183 agencies or something, you know, just incredible expansion of government the past 10 years, and that's what Brooks was talking about.
You've got a good point, John.
Yeah, really.
All right. Read about it in the Cap Journal. John, my friend, we will see you next Friday. Dave Jackson on deck. Stay tuned. I'm Jim Cates.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience the local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
News Connection.
Topeka Collegiate, Topeka's only independent school, treats every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small class learning environment guided by humanitarian principles. At Topeka Collegiate, children fall in love with learning. Enrollment is limited. Call 228-0490 or visit our website at topekacollegiate.org. Topeka Collegiate School, educating children for life.
Excuse me. Why are you saving those old eyeglasses? You know the ones, stuck away in the desk drawer, haven't been worn in years. Yeah, those. You should donate them to your local Lions Club. Lions Clubs have been collecting used eyeglasses for years. They'll take your old eyeglasses and recycle them for someone in need of proper eyewear. Call your local Lions Club for information on where you can donate your old eyeglasses. Lions Clubs International. We serve.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, coming up Monday on the show, we've got Mayor Bill Bunton. He'll be joining me at 9 o'clock, preceded, of course, by none other than Tim Richer. And we're going to be getting right back in, I'm sure, to the Bob Hecht story. Tim was working a lot of overtime this week, needless to say, with our county and city, taking a look at budget considerations. And Dave Jackson, by the way, just walked in. We're getting him mic'd up. But I'm sure we're going to be talking about the Bob Hecht suit settlement. Just incredible. Okay. Why are we not mic'd up? Any reason? Huh?
Oh, okay.
There we go. Yes, indeed.
I'm sorry.
Looked like you were getting ready to take a nap, huh?
Well, I thought we had a break to go to first.
No. We're taking a break. We're there.
Okay.
What do you think of the Hecht settlement, by the way?
Probably reasonable.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Why wouldn't it be?
What?
Why wouldn't it be?
Well, the taxpayers are out $481,000.
$381,000 after them.
Yeah, none of this money's coming out of Bob Hecht's pocket.
The $100,000?
No.
Well, it comes out of his heir's pocket. $50,000 comes out of his
heir's
pocket.
He's going to write the check after he dies.
But it comes out of his estate, sure.
Yeah.
So, that'll be a call on his estate, just as if. So, and $50,000 comes out of the bonding company, which means it's cheaper for them to settle for $50,000 and try to defend the suit.
Well, like John Arnold mentioned
and
last hour, that Bob Hecht can buy a CD for that $50,000. He's going to live off the interest on that CD when he dies.
Well, not then, at 2%, but 2% on a $50,000 CD, which is about what you can buy now, is what?
$1,000?
Yeah,
$1,000.
A year?
Yeah.
That's $100 a month. That's not quite going to get it.
Well, money the county could use.
Well, listen, I mean, first of all, the county had three bites at the apple all 4 years that he was 5 years that he was building that. Three bites.
I mean, 8 years.
Yeah, well, the first 1 or 2 years he didn't build anything.
Oh, yes, he did.
Okay, well, you got the line.
Yes.
The first 2 years was 14,000, 19,000. there's nothing unreasonable about that, considering what he had, the mess he had to clean up with Joan Hamilton. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. The hours he put in there were just phenomenal in that office. We're talking 80-hour weeks over there. I know what time they were spending over there.
Well, because I apparently know he was working a lot longer than 80 hours a week the last year that he billed the county for $127,000 in overtime pay. Mm-hmm.
But the like guys. I said, the county had three people, the county commission at the top, the person right below him, and the
county
person
clerk
that took him. What? And then beyond that, of course, the attorney general said there was nothing illegal about what he did. Now, and so the fact is that they settled for the hours that he specifically could not account for, that he billed them for. Otherwise, his billing practices were in line with what any other attorney would have gotten for the job that he was doing. And it's legal. Now, whether it was morally right, I would have to disagree in those out years where the items went above $100,000. Those were probably not right. But it
look at every year, because our county commission was asleep at the switch. He starts off with $14,000 in overtime pay the first year. Mm-hmm. Watch it progress. There was not one year where it took a step back.
That's his salary. You're looking for the appellate fees on the right side.
Absolutely.
Not going to go back.
No, look at the appellate fees.
Backward,
no.
Works for the county.
But look at the appellate fees.
I'm looking at him.
The point being, there was never a year where he went back the other way. Every year he got by with it and increased the amount he was charging the county for overtime.
And true, but there was more appellate cases being taken, Jim. If you go back and read the newspaper, the things that were being appealed, there were more cases. Now, is it right? Probably not. But it's what happened and what was approved by the county, by the people that are actually sitting on the county commission, with the exception of Shelley Bueller. Two of those guys voted for it.
I agree.
So there you have it.
They shouldn't have. Yeah, well, I agree. I think everybody at the county was asleep at the switch.
Sure. So why would this be a surprise, Jim? I can't believe that you would think this was a surprise. That's what I'm getting at.
I would have.
And
I was with Shelley Bueller on this one, voting no. Said, let's go after the throat. Let's nail him.
That's just dumb. That's just dumb.
Well,
throwing good money after bad, because they didn't stand a chance of winning it. Yeah. Did not stand a chance.
That's what John Arnold basically said. He said, you know, because of the fact that the county commission did a sign off on this, the county clerk, you know, Bob Hecht presented these vouchers to be paid. Mm-hmm. But how can you justify, for God's sake, $100,000 in overtime pay when you're knocking down $110,000 to start with?
I didn't say you could justify it, but he did reasonably. At 80 hours a week, if his pay was for 40 hours a week, then if you just double it, $108,000, if he was putting in another 40, which in many years he was putting in another 40 hours outside work time, just count it up. Because he was there 7 days a week a lot of times.
He should have been home spraying his crabgrass.
Well, he has people to do that for him.
Yeah, when you're knocking down $100,000 in overtime pay, I guess. You can call somebody and have them spray your crabgrass.
Or Lisa could do it.
Yeah. Yes, she sure could. Okay.
But anyway, see there, this is where reasonable people can disagree. But
yes, indeed.
But all I'm saying is it's a bit Pollyannish to expect anything different than this particular result, given the facts.
Yeah. Yeah, respect.
And that's Shelley's. I mean, Shelley's a little bit that way. She's a great girl, but that was, to vote against that was either a political move, if I'm being sarcastic, or cynical, I should say. The cynical. That was a political move just because she knew that they had the other two votes, and she was just throwing it out there because that made good press. And if that's the case, shame
on
her. But I mean, and if she
made good press with me,
you bought it.
Absolutely.
You bought it because there was no other outcome, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to look and see and read what Vic said. There was no other outcome that was going to be favorable for the county.
Yeah. Well, there was one other outcome, and if we were going to settle for $100,000, let's get the $100,000. I mean, to let Bob Hecht, you know, go out to Cap Fed and buy a CD is absolutely ridiculous. Or the promise that him or his daughter is going to write us a check after he dies. It's going to be a little difficult for Heck to do, but apparently the county commissioners, or two of them, bought off on the fact that Bob, after he dies, will write us a check and he'll pay us. Mm-hmm. The money's there now. Mm-hmm. He made $481,000 in overtime pay. If he wants to settle for $50,000, then pay the $50,000. Give me the money.
Well, you weren't there. You don't know. You don't know. You haven't seen Bob's financial statement. You don't know if $50,000 is there for sure or not, unless there was something that Capital Federal divulged.
Yeah, unless he's spending a lot of time at Baby Dolls or Las Vegas. I don't know where else it could be.
Family.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Family.
Yeah, as far as I know, his daughter's, well, I don't know, her husband works. I don't know that much about her family.
Well, I don't either. Family. I don't either, but I can tell you $481,000. I'm sure he's not spending it at the gaming tables.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I don't know. Well, I learned something this week reading Annette's tips, which I always do learn something.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wondered why my crabgrass always seems to be thicker, you know, along the curbs, along the sidewalks, and what have you. And it never occurred to me that Annette and Annette's tips this week said crabgrass, it's going to thrive in the hottest spots of your yard, which is going to be next to your sidewalks.
And also the areas, that get the most water, because any water we do get runs off the sidewalk and right there next to the drive, next to the sidewalk, next to the curb.
Uh-huh.
That's where it's going to be, because you've got the conditions prevalent for germination. It's just a really good a spot-on place for that stuff to come. And where, of course, your fescue is going to be most dormant and the least active, least thick.
Yeah. John, you're not going to – you can certainly join us if you have lawn and garden
questions. Lawn and garden
questions,
yeah.
Yes, indeed. Huh? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you think of something, you just trot on over.
Yeah.
No, that was interesting, and it had never occurred to me. And I've got crabgrass, as we talked about last week.
It's funny the things that people pick up in when I write that Annette's tip that folks don't realize or that they pick up on as a point of interest.
Yeah.
And you've always got great questions when you read that. Shows you do read.
Well, yes, indeed, I do. So does that mean what should I do, since this is where crabgrass really thrives? It's next to the street curb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, next to the driveway. So just give it a heavier dose then in October when I come in with a...
Overseeding, you mean?
Well, not overseeding. Basically in October when I spray to make sure I'm not going to have crabgrass the following year.
Oh, you mean your...
Fertilome for
prodiamine, yeah. The Fertilome prodiamine for all seasons that you're going to use in place of your winter. Yeah, you can put a double application there. You'll get a little bit more. Secondarily, if next year we have 7 inches above normal of rain, by the time you reach the 4th of July, you know that chemical is going to be washed through. Put out another application 1st of July. It doesn't have to be the for all seasons at all. It can be just a simple, straight crabgrass preventer with no fertilizer in it.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be what I would do, and that's what I kind of suggest people do. Watch rainfall amounts, and you know if we're 25% over the average rainfall at that particular point in time, which we were, that there's going to be that efficacy of the chemical is going to be diluted tremendous amount. And so, and especially in those areas where there's runoff involved, where those particular areas get essentially double the amount of water, right there along those fringes where you have runoff.
Yeah.
The basis of your stormwater tap.
Well, I've got another problem that I really was kind of asleep at the switch. And folks, if you have a question or a comment, let's talk about your problems as well.
What's that? Really quick before the break.
Jim.Cates@cjonline.com.
You want to do that after the break?
Well, let's do it after the break. And it's another big challenge I have in my yard. We've kind of touched on it in the past, but it's something that's really gotten out of hand over the past few weeks. Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, Jim.Cates@cjonline.com. If you've got a question or a comment, we'll be back. Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in Mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Frost line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back with Dave Jackson as we are each and every Friday between 10 and 11. And again, folks, if you have a question or a comment, we're going to be talking about it all over the next 40 minutes. So give me an, we're not going to open up our phone lines, but we will read your emails. Jim.Cates@cjonline.com.
We got phone problems?
Huh?
Oh.
Yeah, quality of sound.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, they pretty much have it worked out now, but we'll just go the email route.
Okay.
Bermuda grass. Mm-hmm. And again, this was a greenhouse in southwest Topeka years ago that mislabeled a bag of seed. I thought I was buying fescue. I threw Bermuda on her yard.
Hmm.
Well, the Bermuda, you know, it was somewhat controllable, somewhat controlled up until this year. Mm-hmm. It just kind of was in a small corner of my front yard, not a biggie, and Bermuda does green up in July and August, mm-hmm. green as can be,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the prettiest of grass, and it is now, it is overtaking our fescue big time,
mm-hmm.
and especially over the past 2 months, man, oh man, oh man.
Has it gotten after it, yes.
Oh, uh-huh. Unusual right. year for Bermuda, why this year?
Well, because the hotter the weather and the more it's going to, those rhizomes love it, the tops love it. And they're getting more energy to the rhizomes. Their Bermuda spreads underground with these huge rhizome roots,
yeah.
and can go clear under a sidewalk and without no trouble, and come up on the other side of the sidewalk. And or of course, you're also throwing the clippings out there from when you're mowing. If you're not bagging that Bermuda, the clippings are going to go and root in the next in your fescue yard. Anytime a clipping goes out there, that's another plant.
I was going to ask because, again, the Bermuda up until this year has pretty much been centered in kind of her side yard, if you will.
So are you going to attack
now
it?
Now it's hopped across the driveway. Mm-hmm. It's in her front yard.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to go after it then?
Well, I'm out there pulling it up, and I know you said I've got to gas it eventually.
Yeah, right. This is the time, not eventually. Right now is the time if you're going to. And we need to talk about that, and I really should have had an article in the Annette's Tip about that. Now's the time. If we're going to kill Bermuda, get out there with the Fertilom Kilzol, which is a concentrated form of Roundup. It's the professional-grade Roundup, 41% chemical of glyphosate is the active ingredient. Kilzol is by high yield by Fertilom. A lot cheaper than Roundup if you're buying it at the box stores. But mix with it the spreader sticker. I think we've talked about spreader sticker on your show before. That assures that that chemical will be absorbed most quickly by the grass, and it will stick. And even if it gets if we get a rain on it within an hour, it won't wash off.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need to do that twice, Jim, about 10 days apart. So we got the August. We're at August 20th. This weekend, if you can get out there and spray those areas with the Kilzol and with the spreader sticker, both high-yield products, it'll look like nothing has happened for 7 to 10 days, and then your eye will see the change in color, and then you're going to look to see the areas that you missed or whatever, but you're going to completely apply it again to that Bermuda because you want to kill it all the way to the end of the rhizome. You're going to, so that by the 10th of September, you're Bermuda grass free in those areas where you're going to overseed. And then simply, you don't have to turn that soil or anything. Just get your power rake, power slicer and slice that, Bermuda up a couple of times. Put your seed down, your fertilizer down, the Fertilom new lawn starter, and then slice it all again in another direction once or twice. To make sure all that seed has gotten down through it, then the Bermuda residual serves as your cover, holds the moisture, and your fescue will come up through it. And by mid-October, you'll have new beautiful fescue lawn in those areas. Pretty simple, but that's with this kind of year we've had, that's kind of the activity that needs to go on. And that's a good point and a good question. I haven't talked about it near enough in Annette's tip. That'll be in next week's tip.
Okay. Now you're saying get a spreader and or a cutter, slicer.
A slicer when you're ready to put the seed down.
Where do I get a slicer? What?
You can get them at any. My guys don't let me rent ours out. I've got two.
But go to any rental.
Any rental place
Kansas
or even
rentals.
Westlake even has them. All of those folks have them. They have basically a 2-hour minimum. I think it's depending $35 to $45 to rent one.
What is it exactly? Something you push, pull?
It's got most of them are a Bluebird. They have a Honda engine on it, and it's got vertical tines that are just kind of dull, straightforward tines. And you set that slicer down. There's a single pull handle on the side that lets you set that down just to the point where it pulls the slicer along just enough, in most cases, that you don't have to push it. If it gallops off with you and kills the motor, you know you've got it down too far. And if you have to push it, you know you're not getting to the soil. So that it just makes furrows in the soil, but tears up a little bit the fescue or the Bermuda enough, the Bermuda residual, to get the seed down to the soil. And then of course what you do it again after you put the seed and fertilizer down, just to assure that the fertilizer and seed has gotten down to touch the soil, and to make certain that you have seed to soil contact, and that works like a charm. And you just need to know the size of your area, so you put the appropriate amount of seed in, not too much, not too little, and the appropriate amount of fertilizer, so you don't burn it, or that you get enough fertilizer down to get the job done. We do it. Of course, we do a lot of lawns like that for people, but folks can do it themselves that are not infirm or that have the interest or the time to do it, and it's not hard.
Okay.
Okay. And so that's the solution.
Can I still treat my yard, because I do not want crabgrass next year? Mm-hmm. Is this going to preclude me treating
it? No. See, if you get it done in the first 2 weeks of September, your fescue will be up, and you will have mowed it two or three times by the time that you put the barricade down, the Fur-Loam 4 All Seasons, you correctly name it, at the end of October.
Okay.
It won't preclude you from doing that treatment.
Yeah.
And the good part about doing that treatment, not only is the crabgrass, but as you've mentioned numerous times, it prevents chickweed, henbit, mm-hmm. and dandelions mm-hmm. as well, properly applied in late October. So, no, it will not. Timing is everything, though. That means that you've got a new project this weekend if you want to get that done. Of course, you can pick the stuff up at the White Barn nursery out there.
61st and Fairlawn.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now
the
run through.
It's not open yet, though, I'm told.
No, it's supposed to open next week, I think.
Oh, okay. I knew it was coming up soon.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't get it open quite in time for the opening of school.
Mm-mm.
Now, again, spread sticker.
Spreader sticker.
And that's what now? Is that a liquid?
It's a non-ionic surfactant. It's a liquid concentrate that you're going to mix 2 ounces per gallon right in with your Kilzol, which is 2.5 ounces per gallon together in a gallon. And a gallon then does whatever it says on the label. I can't remember. A gallon of spray, I think, does 500 or 1,000 square feet. I'm not sure, but it's appropriate. You need to know, like I said, need to know the area that you're treating, so you mix the proper amount of spray, because the city water will break down the efficacy of your spray. You can't leave it in the bottle mixed with city water.
Okay.
Which brings to mind our funny taste in city water right now.
What is causing that?
Well, they said what was causing it, MIB or something in there, but I haven't tasted the funny stuff. I guess I don't have the taste buds for that. All I can suggest is have a little bit of capsaicin on your tongue first and then drink the water.
Well, I wasn't paying any attention, I guess, to the issue yesterday, and Nancy ordered water last night.
Oh, really?
And sent it back and said there's something just really wrong with this water.
Really?
And sent it back and said, you know, I don't think I'll have water. Bring me a glass of wine.
No kidding. Was she the one that was mentioned in the paper this morning?
No.
Oh, okay. You weren't at Mezcal or whatever the name of that restaurant?
Uh-uh. No, Mezcal, yeah. No, but it was in Southwest Topeka. It was apparently
I'll be darned.
Bad.
Well, see, we're on rural water, so where we're at, so we don't notice it.
Yeah.
Consolidated Rural Water District 4 pumps their water from wells.
Yeah, I think we're on the
city
water.
Rural Water District 4 gets their water from wells. They only sign with the water that they contract for a small amount of water and pay it, the city for it, just as an insurance policy, whether they take it or not. Yeah, standby.
We need to take a break.
Already?
Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road. The new location, the White Barn location, 61st and Fairlawn. And if you have a question or a comment, you can always call the 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road store at 232-3416, 7 days a week for any of your questions pertaining to your lawn, your garden, the whole nine yards. We'll be back. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Acnea, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Monday morning at 8, Tim Rencher. Monday morning at 9, Mayor Bill Bunton. 8:45, tentatively, we've got Jimmy Clanton that's going to be joining us by phone.
Wow!
You remember Jimmy Clanton?
Of course.
Really?
Of course. How could you not?
Just a Dream and Venus and Blue Jeans and Go Jimmy Go, yeah. Saw him in Solana about 3 weeks ago. He was at an oldies concert.
Oh, you got to go to that?
Yes, Kathy Young. Well, that's one Terrence Stewart was telling us about. Kathy Young. And Jimmy Clanton, the Contours, and the Tokens. It was a great show.
When I left you, you were going to see if you could sell that to your wife.
Well, I did. We
Fantastic.
Sold it to Nancy, and off we went. So it was a good show. And we, the only entertainer we met was Jimmy Clanton. Should have met Kathy Young. Hot? Oh, nice looking. 60 years old. She was a hottie. And but at any rate, we invited Jimmy to come on the show. And he said, sure, give me your card. Don't call me, I'll call you, type of deal.
So he did call you?
Yeah, look, got two messages from him yesterday.
Wow.
Wanted him to come on. So that'll be a lot of fun. Trip down memory lane, those shows are always fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
Cool stuff. Yes, indeed.
What do we got? We're going to look at the specials, huh?
Yes, we are. Specials at Jackson's this weekend.
Well, we're still doing the garage sale. That's kind of a lot of fun for people to go come dig through all of this stuff that we've got at 30%, 50%, 75% off. Just stuff that's been there too long. Still good stuff. But Annette found some fencing that we took home, some steel fencing to keep the dog out of the perennials. And so that's not in the sale because I've got to put that up here in the next week or two because the weather's been so hot. My poor old dog has jumped our barrier and has been in there digging in my perennial garden, and now I've got to replant.
Well, really? Yeah.
So, but the great thing about this is you anything that you buy during August, get bulb dollars coming with it.
Okay.
And you use these bulb dollars, one bulb dollar for every $5 purchased, and it doesn't matter if it's on sale or what you're buying, you will get 50% off of your total bulb purchase by buying down bulb dollars, and so up through October 31st. The bulbs are scheduled to arrive first week of September. We're looking forward to a little larger display this year, and we'll have the bulbs at the greenhouse and also at the White Barn out there, which, of course, we're having a week from Saturday, our big grand opening. We'll have hot dogs, hamburgers free. If you care to donate, we are over there. We're doing the SASU people. They're the shelter folks, the no-kill shelter folks. They're trying to build a shelter for and get low-cost neutering established so that no animal has to be euthanized like they're doing, and so your donations to that would be appreciated.
And it's not that, not that painful. I've been neutered. It's not that painful.
Well, it was for a little while.
Really, I just didn't have much of a problem with it.
Well, I didn't either, but I bled a lot.
Oh, yeah. I didn't. No. Yeah, we've both been neutered.
But I didn't, yeah. That happened when I was 24, right after my second unplanned child.
Yeah. Well, that was after our second unplanned child. That's when...
That was a long time.
That's when the wife neutered me. Mm-hmm. She said, you've got two choices. I don't think you're going to like choice number one. Really might not like choice number two, but if we're going to get back to choice number one, you better take care of choice number two, which we're going to neuter you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and that didn't say anything about it, but we had our first two kids in within 2 years and 2 months of our marriage, so it was time to go a different route. Since birth control pills didn't seem to agree with hers. Anyway.
Yes.
Anyhow, grubs. It's time to get grubs. We've got a sale on. We've got...
You're not selling grubs.
Time to kill them. If grubs are a problem, and they would be a problem if you're seeing more than half a dozen in a shovelful, if you dig, go out to your yard and dig a spade up, if you can get it in the ground. And you see more than six, then you better start thinking about control, because with that high a concentration, either two things are going to happen. Either they're going to get more concentrated and cause actual physical damage to the root system of your lawn, making it die off over the winter, or if not over the winter, then a really bad problem in the spring, or you're going to get a higher concentration of grubs will attract moles for sure. And people don't want to do that. Now, I'm not saying that if you get rid of all the grubs, you won't still have some moles, because you may have earthworms, mole crickets, other insects underground. But certainly, if you've got more than six grubs per shovelful, which is less than a square foot, then you've really got a feast there. The moles will find that.
In 18 years, we've never had a grub problem. Do I really need to even... fool with it as far as looking for grubs? It's never been a challenge.
Never been a challenge. If you don't have if you don't have moles out there and don't have, then you evidently don't have grubs or much in the way of earthworms. So I wouldn't worry about it. No, I'm not into recommending people put down chemicals just because somebody says it's time or because the chemical's on sale. But
yeah, now earthworms we've got,
but not enough evidently to track moles. Because you'd be telling me about your mole problem if you had it.
Because
people come in just absolutely livid what moles have done to their yard or for their planting areas, all of that kind of stuff. They do a lot of disturbing, one or two moles. Moles are single creatures. Usually it's just one mole in a standard yard. But they can dig in a day easily a couple hundred feet of trench or mole run in a day.
Yeah.
And so... two or three days you haven't noticed it, and all of a sudden you're out there looking at your yard, and it looks like a topographical map or something. But anyway.
Let's take a real quick look at moles. If you've got moles, what do you do?
If you got moles, now's the time to treat. Right after, it's been a little bit later coming because it's been so hot the grubs have stayed well below the surface just to stay cool. But this recent rain and some cooling has attracted them towards the surface, and looking at the long-term forecast Tuesday or so with more rain and more cool weather, they're going to be up and prevalent and feeding. So time to do. It's a little late to do the grub-free zone because that's imidacloprid. As the active chemical, that doesn't work as rapidly as does the MACH2, which is a little more environmental friendly. And we're given 15% off if you've got a big yard and need 5 bags or more. 10 bags or more, you're getting 20% off on the chemical, which is, like I said, pretty much environmentally friendly. We've got has been certified as one of the eco-friendly products now by the government. So that's what to do. Encore azaleas.
That's going to take care of your grubs.
Yes.
But what do you do with mole?
The mole?
This little rascal's out in your backyard. He's now dug up 100 feet of trenching in a day's time.
There's several choices.
All right. Let's go through some of those choices.
The best choice, of course, is trapping it with one of the plunger traps. K-State did a three-year study. That was the one that worked by far the best. Second most important was, or best, was the worms that are disguised as, the plastic night crawlers. And within the head, there's a poison. And as soon as that mole bites into that, they turn the head around on a night crawler so that they're able to push the poop out of the worm with their paws, and they eat the head first, and that's where the poison is. And these, that's the second most effective. Having zero effectiveness is the old juicy fruit in the deal. Bombs, unless you're really lucky and catch one off guard, and by that I'm talking about the gas, where you release gas in the runs, that is not very effective unless you're right there next to the mole, pretty much. And if you're that close, just take your spade, flip him out of the soil, and whack him. Or, of course, you can go to the shelter, humane shelter, and adopt a terrier mix, and they'll go get it. Of course, your lawn's going to be in a little worse shape than just the moles, but I've had a terrier from the pound, and she worked pretty good.
Yeah.
Really took care of my mole problem.
So can we rent your terrier? Is that a possibility?
She got old and died. I don't have her anymore. But next dog I get from the shelter probably will be a terrier mix again, just for fun. if Annette will let me get another dog.
Now, what would you do with a dog?
What would I do with a dog?
Well, you're gone for 6 weeks. Well, you're gone for 6 weeks every winter. What are you going to do with a dog for 6 weeks?
Fortunately, our son-in-law and son both live within a half mile, and they come over and feed the dog, put the water out, and take care of the cats, that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay, so you've got somebody around now.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they appreciate it a whole lot, but I do a whole lot for them, so I expect that that's kind of their duty, and they know it.
Yeah. Well, that's not bad.
No.
All right. And you've got it covered then.
And we've got a heated doghouse for the dog if they need it, so. Actually, it's a germination pad that you just keep plugged in and run at 70 degrees, and that you put that below their bedding, and that keeps the doghouse kind of warm.
It's a what now?
A germination. We sell rubber germination mats, seed germination mat. But instead of using it for seed germination, we just take it out there and lay it out on the floor of the doghouse.
We've never talked about your seed germination.
Well, that's because I'm in Florida. I mean, Hawaii. we don't do our show in absentee.
But you would use those in January then, as far as your seed germination.
If you're going to grow your own seed or your own marijuana, you got to get you got to get seed germination mats, because the soil has to be 70 degrees to germinate tomatoes, peppers, marigolds, petunias, any of that stuff. You got to have 70 degree temperature, and a mat's a self-governing rubber mat that costs about $25, your cheapest way to do it.
Now, you said marijuana. You don't have people that come in and say, I'm growing marijuana, this is what I need to do.
No, but you can smell them when they come in.
Really?
The people, yeah. Well, yeah.
You know.
I know what?
Somebody comes in, you can, by their smell, you know what they're going to do with the seed germination.
Sure.
Really?
Well, yeah. I'm not going to turn them in, though. You know what they're going to do, what they're up to.
Huh. All ages, demographically?
Yeah, all ages. I mean, because, you know, some are the aging hippies, and some are the new users that are convinced that marijuana doesn't cause a memory problem, short-term memory loss, and all that other stuff that's been...
Now, I'm pretty naive. What does marijuana smell like? If somebody's coming into Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, how do you know a marijuana user? What's it smell like?
Okay, well, you remember gym class or phys ed class, and how the gym socks would smell after about a week before you took them home on Friday and washed them? Well, now imagine that you're burning those socks instead of washing them.
And that's it.
that's kind of the way we used to describe it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
John Arnold's shaking his head, yes. So you all have been places I haven't been.
Is that right?
Well, anyway, I suppose so.
So you and if they've been token a little bit in their car as they walk, right before they walk in the door, it's overpowering. If they think they're fooling anybody.
Probably just like when you smoke cigarettes, you know, you carry it around on your,
oh,
your
sure.
clothes and your...
So mm-hmm. Exactly.
When I first moved to Colorado, I went to a conference up in Aspen with a couple, an assistant of mine and one of the city council women, and we went out to this bar, and I got in this bar, and I smelled, I said, there's rope burning in here. And they said, shh. I said, really? What is that? They said, that's pot. Oh.
Well, hemp okay. is rope. You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly, you know. I'm his so naive farm, and inexperienced, I didn't know.
You know, I just missed that whole culture because
well,
I
so
was
did I. I mean, I did, okay. I did never participate yeah. in it until the first mm-hmm. time I was in Colorado when I was with HUD, and I was at Loretto Heights. It was a college in West Denver,
yeah.
and we were housed there because this college was about to go under, and HUD was about to acquire their dorms because they'd loaned the money, and so they put the whole National College for HUD people in right there at Loretto Heights and in with the students. And so every yeah. kind of night or so, or at least once a week, the students next door. And by the way, this was a co-ed dorm even back in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And so we would bang on the wall and tell the folks next door to quit burning their socks. Because it was coming through from there.
I'll be doggone.
I went to Colorado in 77 from North Dakota. And
yeah. 76 was when I was there.
Okay. The lady that was the City Hall reporter for the Minot Daily News said, well, that's terrific you're going to Colorado because it's a great place because they decriminalized marijuana. It's just a $5 fine or something like that. And I said, really? I didn't know that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So. But she was tuned into it, so you experienced it also, Dave.
Yeah. Sure did.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I've drank enough beer, obviously, to fill Lake Sherwood, but I've never been into the drug scene. I was married in 1966. We got married. We were 19 and 17 when we got married, so just babies.
Hmm.
So I missed. I was out working for a living in 66 when I left college in 66 at Northwest Missouri in Maryville. Pot was nowhere to be found.
Well, I'm sure not.
At least 67 the next year.
When they started coming back from Vietnam,
back,
yeah,
it was just, oh,
yeah. Those guys.
Everywhere, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
And I was in the Peace Corps in the early 60s for a couple of years, and then I went back to graduate school and then worked in cities. And in cities, I was always somewhat a law enforcement officer or close to it. In many, as city manager, you're the chief law enforcement officer, and so you if you had a babysitter or something who had access to marijuana, they wouldn't offer it to you. The risk was too great. And I had staffers, I'm sure, in Colorado that smoked pot, but they didn't around me.
Never been around it. So
anyway.
But it happens at Jackson's Greenhouse, not smoking pot.
No.
But
he can smell it.
Yeah, you can.
But you've never had a customer come in and specifically say,
no,
I'm growing, growing pot, what do I need to do?
Right. But the stuff that they buy, you can tell.
Yeah.
When I was up in Eureka, California, Humboldt County is a big pot-growing area.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, people would frequently go to the county commission and argue that they ought not to enforce the law on marijuana because it was such a big cash crop in Humboldt. And, in fact...
That was their excuse, huh?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And in many of the yard and garden stores, their big seller was plastic pipe, irrigation pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Because people would go out into the national forest and irrigate pot.
Mm-hmm.
And it got real dangerous to walk around the national forest.
Wow.
Serious. I mean, there were six major national forests in that area. And
yeah, you didn't
want a lot of pot.
Right. That, too. The people that spend the high dollar on the lighting systems, those are typically folks that are interested in getting their crop going early.
In the basement?
Yep.
Yeah.
So naive.
It's amazing the things you can learn in the gardening business. Huh?
I'm telling you. I suppose so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the lighting systems and all that stuff.
Well, let's don't talk about stuff to smoke. Let's talk about stuff to eat.
Finish up here. Yeah, well, fall gardens can be done yet. We still have seed potatoes. We will have onion plants after the Labor Day. And, of course, I was going to have cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, and Brussels sprout plants. But the rabbits got in and ate those, so right now I don't have the plants. I hate it. Hate it. And nobody else, it was so hot that nobody else even planted much. I haven't been able to find any yet, plants to plant. But on the food position, you're right on the last weekend that you can plant green beans for fall crop. You can still plant radishes. You can plant turnips. You can plant...
Strawberries you mentioned in Annette's tip.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to do as far as strawberries?
That, you're working for a better crop next year. You're going to fertilize right now with the Fertilum Gardener Special or the High Yield Gardener's Garden Fertilizer. Just to promulgate good, healthy new runners that will actually be the parent plants then of the berries next year. And so that's the trick, is getting lots of nutrients and energy into that runner, that root system, the pups they call them, and for next year's production. That's what strawberries need to be done at this point. And then otherwise, gardening's just a fall garden, and those can be very enjoyable. But potatoes, onions, garlic, and radishes, lettuce. We're selling a lot of lettuce seed. That kind of stuff for a great fall garden.
You can grow lettuce from seed still this
year?
That,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Ah. Because it's a 35-day crop.
Okay.
You can have lettuce up and harvest in 35 days. Leaf lettuce, not head lettuce. Anyway.
Now, peppers, are they basically a spring crop?
Yeah, they have a long season. We plant that seed in the 1st of February so that we have decent plants by the 1st of May. I mean, they're a slow grower.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't be a recommended crop at this point for sure.
We've had good luck with peppers.
Unless
this
instead
year.
Of marijuana, you want to grow peppers under the lights in your house. So anyway,
well, that's a crop we've had good luck with.
Good,
well, banana peppers.
Yeah. They got started early and they've been prolific. The hot peppers kind of don't mind this hot weather. They kind of like it.
Yeah. And tomatoes. You know, tomatoes were late to set, but we're going to have a bumper crop this year.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. People have been bringing in tomatoes. They look pretty good.
Yeah.
And so, which surprises me because of the heat we've had. But and then the other thing was it took so long because it was so cool and wet that they didn't produce for a while. And then all of a sudden, bang, we've got lots and lots of tomatoes.
Yeah.
So hopefully the tomatoes have survived and we move on to, and you have a great fall crop as well, all the way through to mid-October or whenever our first freeze is.
Let's come back to the grand opening next week.
Yeah, next
Saturday.
A week
from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow.
White Barn.
Looking forward to that. We're going to have, in the newspaper, we're going to have a special coupon for people to use for huge discount on plants out there. And we're going to, of course, have the fundraiser. They're going to give away five, this SASU group, Shelter Animal Group. They're going to give away five free spay and neuterings for people that have a pet. They're going to be a drawing for that. And like I said, I'll be doing hot dogs and hamburgers free with fixings. And I'll be cooking out there from 10 to 4, pretty much. And hopefully we'll get to see a lot of people. We've got...
I think 61st and Wanamaker... That roundabout, I believe, is supposed to be open midweek next week.
Well, that's kind of what I was counting on because, I mean, that's why we moved that grand opening back until when people could actually access the place.
Yeah. And it's not that difficult to get to, folks, without that roundabout being open, because if you're coming out of downtown Topeka or central Topeka, just get on Burlingame, you're going to run right into the White Barn location. Mm-hmm. At 61st and Farallon, because Burlingame turns into 61st Street.
Well, as you drive out there, you're going to see, or should see by the end of the day, a big, huge sign out there in front of the place hanging from a pair of posts out there. Yeah, that
good.
We don't know how long the county will let us leave it there, but there will be a big sign, not only the one that's facing Farallon as you come out on the T, but there will be a big sign there at the entrance. If Lynn Holquist gets it attached, he's got the signs. I've got the signs to him. He just has to get it up. And he had the structure up, so now the signs affixed to the board, and we'll see how that goes.
Good deal.
That was your suggestion, Jim. So
well, delighted to hear it. Because
I should have moved on that a lot sooner, but frankly, there hadn't been a lot of that traffic out there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also have a big sign at Canterbury. Complex.
Oh, okay. 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 And that's right west.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the White Barn location. And mm-hmm. that's all starting at 9:30 is when you open?
We open. I'll hopefully have the first burgers and hot dogs and stuff off at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
If people want burgers Sorry. That early for the early risers. But plan on it. I mean, because it's just a free will donation for the shelter. If they don't choose to give, I don't care. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's whatever they want, whatever the proceeds that we get that will be turned over for their operation.
Okay. And that's coming up a week from tomorrow, folks. And again, if you haven't been out to the White Barn location, you need to do so. Just absolutely are going to love it. Pretty as can be.
I haven't been there. I'm going to go.
Yeah. It's a goodie. Okay, specials. We've got about 2 minutes. You want to run through the specials again this weekend?
Well, the secret sale at the bottom of the ad this week, again, is the 2 1/4-inch potted perennials, 99 cents with this coupon. I want to make sure that people know, or you can come out and tell us that you have the coupon or that you saw the coupon in the Wednesday paper, Capital Journal. Right at the bottom, I put a secret sale down there with a coupon, and that is 65% off on there on a coupon, and a lot of perennial beds are needing to be reworked. Of course, we're still doing the recycling. You bring your recycled pots out, we'll give you up to $10 retail value of some annual plants that we picked out and put on a couple of tables. Just trying to do our little part to recycle stuff. Sometimes we can reuse what you bring out. Other times it has to be crushed, but it will go to a recycler rather than out to the county, out to what people used to call Mount Jackson in northwest Shawnee County. Anyway, so there we have it. And Annette and I plan on being there both days and help and being there. So if you have any questions. Saturday and Sunday. We're open till 5 on Saturday, 4:30 on Sunday.
Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road, 232-3416, 7 days a week. To answer your lawn and garden questions, the new location, 61st and Fairlawn. Absolutely beautiful. Grand opening officially is going to be a week from tomorrow. But folks, if you're out and about in southwest Topeka or southern Shawnee County, now keep in mind the White Barn's open now, but this is going to be the official grand opening a week from tomorrow.
Yep,
so
we're open 7 days a week out there.
Run out now. Dave, we will see you next Friday, my friend. John, we will see you next Friday.
Got it.
And folks, we'll see you Monday morning. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend. I'm Jim Cates.